of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up, you need to get up, you need to get to me. We have much, 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 much stuff to talk about. 454-0400. Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up. Get to me. Well, you know, I think it is important. I think it is critical. I think that it is very, 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 very important that we really embrace what this election has brought us, has brought to us. And we're going to do that tomorrow, all morning long. We're going to be talking to, and I want to underscore, despite what you are hearing out here about this whole centrist thing that has come to the United States of America as a result of the rout of the Republican Party, of the mandate from folks out there, no more corruption, no more war. No more Bush. Despite that, comment about it's going to be a it's a centrist thing. Tuesday will show us differently, and also in the Mondays at 9 segment today, we're going to have an assessment of the progressive, the liberal, dare I say it, liberal impact of those that were elected into office. Y'all are going to be surprised that all of the progressive liberal folks that have been elected all across this country. And we're going to talk about it all day tomorrow. We're going to talk about it all day. We're going to talk about it in the 7 o'clock hour today. Tomorrow we're going to have some folks. You want to know how liberal it was? They were passing pro-marijuana legislation. Okay, and we're going to talk to the marijuana folks tomorrow all about that. So you don't want to miss it. Look, it was an amazing election, and I think it is time to deconstruct. I think it is time to deconstruct this election. We're going to do that tomorrow morning and today when you join me here on the Wake Up Call. We have much, much, much business to tend to, much, much, much business to tend to. We are going to have a busy morning here as well. Folks coming into the studio. We're going to be talking about Donald Rumsfeld being replaced by Gates. Robert Perry is going to be joining us in the next hour to talk about the significance of Gates. Are we getting another Rumsfeld or worse? Much business coming towards you. Stay with me.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Radio Mix. Nuevo concepto en radio. La música que te gusta. El torneo que te encanta. Por la nueva de San Luis. Con todos los éxitos del momento. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8 de la noche. Radio Mix. Por el 920 AM. Escucha a través de la red electrónica. En internet. WGNU.net. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8.
Hi, this is Lethea Owens with a Motivational Moment. I would like to encourage you to use persuasion instead of convincing when you're communicating with others and you are wanting to influence them. You see, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. When you use persuasion, people actually adopt your way of thinking. But when you convince people, guess what? All you get is compliance. So please join me on Mondays from 1 to 2 for Motivational Mondays, where your dreams become reality on AM 920 WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Pass over, not to do it, Oh,
welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up, get up, get up, get up, get to me. Huh? I guess it's a little difficult, huh? It looks like Bolton will not be getting his gig back. John Bolton will not be getting his gig back. And guess what? Whose vote it's coming down to? It's coming down to Chafee, Lincoln Chafee, the Republican who lost to a Democrat. And how about this? Legislation aimed at Bush's once secret program for wiretapping us, for spying on us, for going after us without warrants. Guess what? It looks like that may not be happening in this lame duck Congress either. Senate Democrats emboldened by Election Day say they are put in control come January. I understand that they will be put in control come January. They say that we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on giving him the go ahead. And as for next year, Boy George shouldn't expect the Democrats to be moving forward on this either, except for unless there is considerable congressional oversight. And according to Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, we have been asked to make sweeping and fundamental changes in laws for reasons that we do not know and in order to legalize secret unlawful actions that the administration has refused to fully divulge. If legislation is needed for judicial review, then we should write that legislation together in a bipartisan and thoughtful way. Oops. Bipartisan and thoughtful way. That leaves Boy George out, don't it? He can't come to that meeting, can he? And how is the Bush administration responding to this? The Justice Department will launch a new campaign for the legislation, casting the choice as one between supporting the program or dropping it altogether and appearing to be soft on Al-Qaeda. Good luck with that. I want you all to understand where we stand as a result of this election. I want y'all to understand where we stand as a result of this election. Karl Rove should really be checking the mailbox for a pink slip. And in fact, you saw, I think the bloom is off the turd blossom. I think the bloom is off the turd blossom. Boy George snapped when somebody asked him a question about Karl Rove, said something snarly, snarky about Boy George in front of the press corps. He was not happy. Think about it. Think about what Karl Rove did for Boy George. Karl Rove was supposed to deliver on Social Security. It didn't happen. Karl Rove was supposed to deliver on tax cuts. It didn't happen. Karl Rove's agenda, plan, theory, movement on this issue for this midterm election was to cast the Democrats, the progressives, on the side of enemies. It didn't work. As I recall, 30 additional seats for the Democrats in the House means that the Democrats should be controlling Congress probably for the next 20 years. It's going to be hard pressed. It's going to be a hard thing for the Democrats to lose 30 seats. It's going to be a hard thing for them to lose 30 seats in a very short period of time. The Republicans held on to the House for 12 years. The Democrats probably are going to hold on with 30 additional seats for 20 years. Because look what it has taken to get the Republicans out of, despite all of their wrongdoing. It took a Mark Foley. It took an illegal war. It took corruption beyond description. It took putting leadership members of the United States House of Representatives on trial or in jail. And oh, lest we forget, 3,000 lives and 30,000, 40,000, 50,000, 600,000 dead Iraqis. Look what it took to get the Republicans out. If the Democrats just sit there and skin and grin, they can stay there for 20 years because that's the standard that has been set. What it took to get the Republicans out. Oh, the Democrats are going to be holding the House for at least 20 years. Get used to it. Get used to it. Now, the Senate's a different thing. There's only a one. Too bad all the senators weren't up for re-election, because there would have been a different realignment. Understand the significance of this election. Don't let any of these newscasters out here lead you to believe that this is a rush towards the middle. This morning, we are going to be talking, in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to Robert Perry. He's going to be telling us about the replacement, the presumed replacement for Donald Rumsfeld, Mr. Gates. In the Mondays at 9 segment, we're going to be talking to Progressive Democrats of America. They're going to break it down for us about how progressive of an election this was, despite what the media, the national media, the billion-dollar media is telling you. And then all tomorrow long, we're going to be talking to entities across the country about the progressive run. What has happened as a result of this election? 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. It doesn't look like wiretaps are going to happen for this administration. Oops. Oops, oops, oops. And I suppose you all thought that the days of hanging chads were over. Well, technically, yeah. But it's Florida. They're going to find a way to cheat with whatever they got. Okay? They're going to cheat with whatever. Okay, they got rid of the paper ballots. We'll find a way to cheat with the electronic ballots. Today, another recount in Florida. This is in the 13th Congressional District. It's a little south of Tampa. This is the place where the voters used the machines that 40% of Americans used. And there was an email out here by a key election official in this the 13th Congressional District saying that she may have known well before election that the machines were not working properly. Republican Vern Buchanan beat Democrat Christine Jennings by 373 votes with 237,842 votes counted. This tiny margin, less than half of 1%, has triggered an automatic recount. But understand, this is the district's most populous county, and thousands of the votes, that's what the Democrat believes, thousands of the votes went unrecorded. Huh. 1-877-920-WGNU. I'll be back to talk some more about that. You need to stay with me. My name is Liz Brown. Get up, get up, get to me. We have much business to tend to.
Good morning. morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your local REMAX office. Northbound 270 at 70, look for that accident to have been cleared. Westbound 40 between McCausland, after McCausland, look for an accident on the right shoulder. Northbound 270 on the ramp to Page, look for an accident involving a vehicle off the roadway. Eastbound 70 at K and 79, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 is building on either side of 44. Eastbound 40 at Timberlake Manor and 270, you've got heavy volume there. Westbound 270 at 367 through New Florissant, look for normal traffic. Westbound 5570 onto Poplar Street Bridge, expect no delays. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is looking good into the landing, and northbound Route 3 is flowing freely onto the PSB. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your local REMAX office. Looking to buy or sell a home? Search with REMAX at REMAX.com. They have millions of listings and outstanding agents, so you will have outstanding results. Visit REMAX.com today for more details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, mostly cloudy, 20% chance of rain in the morning, and partly sunny throughout the day with a high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. And Wednesday, look for windy, colder, rain likely in the morning and early afternoons. Then rain and or snow likely late in the afternoon with a high in the lower 40s. Currently, we have 41 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 41 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920, WGNU.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home tonight.
I wish I didn't get so weak. Oh, ooh, baby, just to hear you speak. Makes me argue just to see how much you're in love with me. You're like a queen.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. Get up, get to me. Ann, 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to tend to. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Ann. Jean.
I said that I'm sorry to hear about Ed Braley dying, the CBS correspondent. Hello?
Start over again, please.
Yeah, I said I was sorry to hear about Ed Bradley, the CBS correspondent that died this weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, I met him back in 1976 at the Democratic National Convention at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. He was, well, I was trying to talk to Walter Cronkite at that time, and I seen him. He was kind of irate because I cut right in and was talking to Walter Cronkite, trying to talk to Walter Cronkite, and he was standing there. But later on, I met him. He was with Jimmy Carter's campaign, and he was a very nice person.
Yes, it's going to be unfortunate. It's going to be interesting to see who 60 Minutes replaces him with.
Well, yeah, we will have to wait and see what happens.
All right, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. And, when we look at this election, and again, it is going to it's going to be huge. The ramifications of this election are huge, and they're going to be even huger. This is an election. These are amazing times. When you look at what was said on the Sunday morning shows yesterday, it was interesting to me that the Meet the Press spent their time talking to Joe Lieberman instead of the Democrats who won and the Democrats who ran. He's an independent. But they spent their time talking to Joe Lieberman. Other stations talked to a lot of other Democrats out here. You would have thought that the Meet the Press would have had, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, somebody up there that represented those who won the election. That aside, where the Democrats went yesterday, they're talking about timetables. They're talking about pulling out of this war in its entirety. And you know what? I don't think America's going to put up a big fight. I don't hear, I don't see, I don't feel America putting up a big fight. Carl Levin, pushing for a timetable. Carl Levin and Joe Biden said they expect some Republican support for a resolution calling for troops to begin coming home as soon as March. Let me see. It is November, December, January, February, March. They're talking about bringing people home in March. We are going to urge George Bush on a bipartisan basis, hopefully, to change the course of Iraq by doing a number of things. Not only telling the Iraqis we're not there in an open-ended way, but also to set some milestones so that we can begin to withdraw in 4 to 6 months. White House Chief of Staff said that's not going to happen. And if my memory serves me correctly, as it often does, George Bush also said it wasn't going to happen on Election Day, and it did. And here is the delicious, here's some more delicious things that are happening post-election. Do you know that, this speaks to the integrity and it speaks to the foulness of this Republican administration and those who enable them. Do you know what Rush Limbaugh said after Election Day? You know what he said after Election Day? He said, I feel liberated. Now I don't have to carry the water for people who I didn't support to begin with. Now I can tell the truth. Baby, you a lie and the truth ain't in you. You a lie and the truth ain't in you. So Rush Limbaugh is admitting to his listeners, I've been carrying the water for these people, and I didn't have the guts to tell the truth about them because it was more important for me to keep these horrible people in office than it was to tell the truth. you a lie and the truth ain't in you. Oh, and here's something else the Republicans are saying. The Republicans are a little upset. The Republican leadership are really kind of teed off, ticked off at Boy George. You want to know why? They're saying, why didn't you get rid of Rumsfeld when we could have used it as a campaign issue? You got rid of Rumsfeld to protect your own self, but you didn't get rid of Rumsfeld to protect us, sweetie. And this is a message to all of you angry Republicans out there. Angry with Republicans without a mandate. Angry Republicans without the big offices. Let me tell you something. You let the dog out, and now you acting like you're surprised that he bit you. Y'all enable Boy George to lie to folks. Y'all supported Boy George in his lies. And y'all, what y'all think, that his lies were just reserved for the enemy? Welcome to the real world, baby. If you a liar, you're a liar, you're a liar, you're a liar, you're a liar, 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 liar. And party affiliation, party labels, doesn't stop those who are pathological liars from lying. He didn't support you, sweetie. He didn't support his daddy. What makes you think you're going to be any different? He wasn't looking out for you. He wasn't looking out for his daddy. 1-877-920-WGNU. Oh, and there's more to come. And there's more to come. David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Look, I appreciate your service. You do a great job. Look, you know, I was listening to a show myself Sunday talking about politics, but it was local, and I thought it was real interesting because one of the things about it, the people that were talking on the show, they were talking about money that was not spent in the black community for getting the vote out. And they also were talking about that there weren't the black commentators out there to give their expert advice or expert view on what was going on. And I agreed with all that. Now, the one thing that kind of surprised me, that this person said something about money that was spent. And I got to thinking about that first four for kids, they spent about $200,000 to try to get the vote out, to get the four candidates in. The second one, they spent, about $400,000. But they did something else.
They who?
Civic Progress.
Okay.
White males with power and influence.
Okay.
Okay, they did something else. They spent $1.5 million in a grant to the Black Roundtable.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked this individual about it, since I know he's a member of it. And he told me, yeah, it was true. But the thing about it was, I didn't remember those people getting on TV, doing any radio ads or anything. It just seemed like it was some hush money to go along with the movement, you know. Now, I just was wondering, what's your opinion of politicians or big...
Well, you know, I mean, it depends on who you're talking to. You know, what is interesting to me is that here we have people after the fact, talking about money being spent in the community of African descent, okay? I was doing shows months ago about trying to get folks to spend some money in the African community, months and years ago. And it's always interesting to me that the money that the criticism is after the fact, when we don't have the leadership within the community of African descent that we should. There was a meeting on Saturday held by black elected officials on Saturday, right? They're going to come together and they're going to weigh in on elections. Okay, that's a good thing. It's awful silly to me that you're coming together after these huge elections. Awfully problematic that you're coming together after, and they don't even have their bylaws done yet. And this is.
You know what, though? Let's look at the positive thing, though. The positive thing, at least here in St. Louis. There's a black think tank that's developed to help develop the mentality of the people, and I guess to develop their own particular candidates to run. So
you're talking about? Are you talking about the International Urban Institute?
Of course I am.
Okay, I just want to be clear. That's exactly right.
But in closing, I'm just saying, you know, sometimes these people talk themselves into a corner. You know, they start talking all this stuff, and then you start pulling out their baggage. You know, I mean, people who take money to sell out their community.
And look at the cost. Look at the cost that we're still cleaning up the mess from what the Black Leadership Roundtable has done and what Civic Progress has done. Still cleaning up the mess.
Hey. See you later.
All right. Thanks, David. 1-877-920-WGNU. Stay with me. I'll be back.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Revillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Hello, morning. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. And there will be a meeting Thursday for all of you that are interested in being part of the Wake Up Call Ban. You can give me a call at 367-2743. Let me know if you are going to be, if you're interested. That's going to be Thursday at 1 o'clock. Be there, the Wake Up Call Ban. I think we have a name. Wait, Howard, what do you think of this name for the Wake Up Call Ban? Proposition Funk. We're working on it.
What about what the?
What the? 454-0400. So if you're interested, that number is 367-2743. That's 367-2743. Drop me a line. Give me a number.
Proposition Funk.
You like that? You like Proposition Funk? It kind of grows on you, doesn't it?
That's bad.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Proposition Funk. 1-877-920-WG. I put a smile on your face. 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get to me. Ann, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. I hope you're feeling better this morning.
I am feeling much, much, much better. I got a little bit of rest. I had to run myself down a little bit, but I'm all right today.
All righty. Well, I just wanted to congratulate you and your listeners on the election last Tuesday.
Wasn't it a beautiful thing?
Oh, it was a beautiful thing. And listen, Liz, would you, if you would just say something to, Salvation, because we need that too. Yes, and then when you miss one, I can't even say it is. I'm telling you, but you could when you miss one of the just mention it, Liz, because you have such a wonderful influence, and those children at the school.
You like the babies, huh?
Yes, I love them.
Okay.
And I'm so with them. I'm so with them. You are one of a kind, Liz.
Thank you so much, Ms. Ann. Take care now.
And you too.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, 1-877-920-WGNU. In the next hour, we will be joined by Robert Perry. Robert Perry is, you know him. He broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 80s for the Associated Press and Newsweek. He's written extensively about who Bush wants to appoint to replace Rumsfeld, Robert Gates. He's going to be joining us to talk about that this morning. And then in the second hour, in the 8 o'clock hour, I will be talking to Edwin Canil Vicente. Who is he? He is a survivor of the Guatemalan Army massacre in 1982. And he's going to be talking about his work with the Association of Justice and Reconciliation. These people are out here trying to hold perpetrators of that crime and other massacres legally accountable for their crimes. And guess where most of those people were trained? Right here in America at the School of Americas. That's going to be in the 8 o'clock hour. He's going to be joining me in the studio, Edwin Canil Vicente, a Guatemalan survivor of an army massacre in 1982. That's going to be in the 8 o'clock hour. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, Mondays at 9, we're going to be talking about with progressives of America. They're going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about all of the progressive winds across the United States, despite what you're being told about this movement to the middle. Stay with me. Mike, good morning.
Yeah, Liz. Obviously, the Republicans got, as George Bush said, got thumping.
No, got a serious major thumping.
Well, major wake-up call for them.
We'll see. We'll see. They lost. We'll see if they wake up.
But out of every race that they lost, I didn't see anybody with lawyers going to everyone saying voter fraud, they got cheated, or on and on and on.
Well, you missed the election in Florida. There is a recount going on today in the 13th Congressional District with those machines.
Who,
yes.
Who lost that race?
A Democrat lost that race.
Well, that's why they're saying the Democrat lost. That just proves my point. Now they're yelling and screaming because they lost that race.
Well, no, they're not yelling.
When the Democrat loses, that there's a problem.
Oh, so you think that the Republicans should be commended for being for losing? For losing legitimate.
There must be a trend here. There must be a trend.
Or there's another way to look at this, Mike. There's another way to look at it. The reason why the Republicans are not crying about this and hollering about this is because the Democrats didn't cheat to get to win. When you cheat to win, then people are going to call you on that. That's just the American way.
Okay, that's fine, Liz. Now let me second point here. Three very upstart gentlemen. Governor Steele, Maryland, Lynn Swan, Pennsylvania, Harold Ford, Tennessee. Upstart, very you know, good people. Okay? Steel Republican, Swan Republican, they both lose, fair and square, no problem, nothing's bad. Harold Ford, Democrat, racism. He loses because it was racism.
Well, here's
over the top.
Oh, and here's the thing, Mike. I think that it would be naive to be an American and to look at the history of this country, look at it past and present, to say that racism has gone anywhere in this country. It's naive, number one, to assume that it's
racism today.
All right. Well, wait a minute. Hold on, Mike. Hold on for a second. Hold on for a second, sweetie. You talked. I'm going to talk. I only have a few more minutes before the top of the hour. I only have a few more minutes. It's naive to say that racism has gone away, okay, given that. And I think you were bumbling towards accepting that. I'll assume that you have. For anybody to think that in the heart of Dixie, in a state like Tennessee, and I know Tennessee because I'm from Tennessee, my people from Tennessee, spent many a day on Lookout Mountain. Chattanooga, Tennessee, very, very clear about the racism that exists in Tennessee. Of course, race played a part in the decision of all of them, actually. America, white Republicans are not going to elect a black person into a leadership position like the United States Senate. We've only had one governor, and now we have two. And it wasn't a Republican party that elected the black governor of Massachusetts. It was black Democrats and white Democrats. Of course, race plays a part in it. Why do you think they played that commercial with Harold Ford? Why do you think, and you want to know some other racist things that took place with your hero, Steele? There were racist flyers that were put out in black communities telling black folks that Steele was a Democrat and vote for Steele because he's a Democrat. That's racist racism. Oh, that's right. Who's running Steele's campaign? Race plays a huge part, and until the Republican Party elects a black person to represent white people, race will continue to be an issue. Get used to it, accept it, embrace it. Know your country's history instead of lying about your country's history. Republicans didn't cry about losing because Democrats didn't cheat to win. When you cheat to win, people gonna call you on it. Get used to it. Get used to it. Dan.
Hi, Liz. How are you today?
I'm outstanding.
Yeah, I am too. It takes a lot of sugar to make the medicine go down, as that old song says, doesn't it?
Mm.
For some of these people.
Mm. Well, some people just don't take their medicine, but that's okay. They're gonna get sick.
Yeah, they are sick. But I just wanted to say we had a great week last week, and I think Nancy Pelosi says that she's going to drain the swamp, and I sure hope she does.
Well, we got to stay on them to make certain that they do drain the swamp.
Yes, ma'am, and because I don't think any pedophile is going to get away with too much under her leadership.
Well, I would hope that nobody would. I mean, the first person that you call when you see a pedophile. The police.
Exactly.
Not the head of the Republican campaign party. That part of the Republican party dealing with their campaigns, you
not
call the police.
Bastard. That's for sure.
There you go.
But we're on our way. Maybe, hopefully, God willing, we can change the course of this country and get things straightened out. I don't give myself 100% to the Democrats, but I just hope that we can change things.
Put the brakes on it at the very least. Thanks, Dan.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day.
Robert Perry is going to be joining me in the next hour. We're going to be talking about the Rumsfeld replacement. You don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss that. Stay with me.
The very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel the progress.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Alvinger. The formal report is not due for a month, but President Bush today will get the first look at what a bipartisan group thinks can be done from here on out in Iraq. ABC's Ann Compton has details from the White House.
The White House is hoping this blue ribbon panel can come up with a way out of Iraq. Chief of Staff Josh Bolton.
Nobody can be happy with what's going on in Iraq right now. Secretary Rumsfeld, the President, both said it this past week. What we're doing right now is not working well enough or fast enough.
The Iraq Study Group was formed last spring. It includes former officials, secretaries of state, defense senators, and a Supreme Court justice. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
The violence continues in Iraq. Major General Benjamin Nixon, commander of the multinational forces near Tikrit, says the recent American casualties have forced his troops to dig in their heels.
It has made my soldiers more determined. When we have a casualty, certainly we grieve for the loss, and we grieve for the families who have lost a loved one. But my soldiers become more determined to defeat this enemy.
Iraq's prime minister says he may do some strategy tweaking of his own, reshuffling some personnel. If you have a heart attack, the difference between life and death could only be a matter of minutes. But what happens if you get to the hospital and then you have to wait for that treatment? Here's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
It seems obvious. The faster you get hospital treatment after a heart attack, the better off you are.
We can virtually abort the heart attack.
But a study by Yale University's Dr. Harlan Krumholtz finds simple strategies for faster hospital response times are underutilized.
If we can get these systems down, we can really mitigate the potential harm of a heart attack.
So, a renewed focus on response, what the Heart Association calls D2B, door to balloon, the time from when a heart patient enters the ER to angioplasty. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
This is ABC News.
You, playing Texas Hold'em with Mozart, fairies, kings, queens, albino aardvarks, karaoke singing koalas, the Sun City kickball team, wearing flippers, Sasquatch and Nessie holding hands at sunset in the Grand Canyon. Dreams, they can be strange and magical, but if you can't sleep, you can't dream. So ask your doctor about Rosarum, a sleep aid like no other, approved for adults having trouble falling asleep. Rosarum is the first and only prescription sleep aid that in clinical studies shows no potential for abuse or dependence, so you can get to sleep, and maybe your dreams will get to see you again.
Don't take Rosarum if you're taking Luvox, Fluvoxamine, or have severe liver problems. Avoid taking it with alcohol. Don't drive or operate machinery until you know how you'll react to Rosarum. Rosarum may affect certain hormones. Consult your doctor about how this may affect you, or if your insomnia doesn't improve. Take Rosarum right before bed. Side effects may include drowsiness, fatigue, and dizziness. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor today if Rosarum is right for you. For more information, call 1-877-ROSARUM-1. See our ad in Prevention Magazine or visit Rosarum.com.
Swimming babies, dancing babies, singing babies.
Martin Luther King's dream may not have been completely realized, but his legacy is being cast in stone. Groundbreaking today on a memorial to the civil rights leader. Here's ABC's Danielle Lovellotto.
I have a dream.
The monument will be built along the tidal basin, steps from where Martin Luther King Jr. gave this speech in 1963. Former President Bill Clinton and Oprah Winfrey, among others, will turn the first shovels of dirt during the groundbreaking ceremony. The 28-foot-tall monument with King's image chiseled into a stone of hope is expected to cost $100 million. Half has already been raised through donations. Organizers hope it will be completed by the spring of 2008. Daniela Bellata, ABC News.
Has an airline lost your luggage lately? If it has, you're certainly not alone. Complaints are up 25% since August, which was when the government banned most liquids and carry-on bags. By the way, we're learning about this just a week before one of the busiest airline travel weeks of the year, Thanksgiving. Daria Altman here, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota dealers. A Belleville police officer remains in critical condition after being shot in the face by a double murder suspect. Sergeant John Bruff was shot Friday morning during a standoff and a double murder suspect Larry Sitka. Sitka was wanted for murder of his two in-laws, former in-laws, Harry and Dolores Cowley. He was took his own life several hours into the standoff. Police are investigating the murder of a woman in Wellston. The body of a woman in her 30s was found yesterday morning along a vacant lot in the 6200 block of Theodosia. Authorities say the victim had been burned but that her cause of death hasn't been determined as of yet. The victim's name hasn't been released. Anyone with any information is asked to call the St. Louis police at 314-889-2341. One man is dead and two women are hospitalized after a weekend crash in Maryland Heights. Police say the man lost control of his car at Page and Lindbergh Saturday afternoon, left the road, and rolled down the embankment. The driver was pronounced dead at the scene. Two female passengers were thrown from the car and taken to a hospital. There's no word yet on their conditions. Charges are pending against several people after a brawl at St. Louis Galleria. Police say a fight broke out when two teenagers in a food court Saturday evening sparked other fights, eventually involving more than 50 people. No one was seriously hurt. Several juvenile suspects and a few adults faced charges of city ordinance violations, including peace disturbance and third-degree assault. And finally, this hour, police are investigating the weekend murder near Union Station. 22-year-old Charles Hogans was shot to death early Sunday morning behind the Plush nightclub off 20th Street. Police say Hogans and the alleged gunman had been thrown out of the club earlier for fighting. That is a look at this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota dealers. Through December 15th, visit St. Louis Toyota Service Centers and join a donation drive for neonate MRI shuttle for St. Louis Children's Hospital. Toyota, a smart choice to move forward. Now, taking a look at your WGNU traffic, this hour's traffic is sponsored by Walmart. Both directions, 170 at Del Mar and Page, there's road construction reduced to two lanes. Eastbound 70 at Bryan Road and 79, look for heavy volume there. Eastbound 44 at Soccer Park and 270, no problems there. Northbound 270 is slowing on either side of 44. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, look for congestion there. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and 270, look for heavy volume. Westbound 270 at Old Falls Ferry and West Florissant, you've got some slow traffic there. Westbound 270 from New Florissant all the way through 170, look for delays in the right lane. Westbound 5570 from St. Clair Avenue all the way onto the PSB, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well into the landing. Northbound Route 3, there's some delays at the top of the ramp. McKenzie just north of Gravois, there's a report of an accident. And Switzer at North Broadway, there's an accident as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Walmart. Walmart's rolling back prices on tons of toys in Toyland, like the X Games motorbike was $149.52, now just $119. Plus, they've rolled back prices on over 10,000 items. Stop by and save big. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy, chance of rain in the morning, partly sunny by the afternoon, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. And Wednesday, windy, colder, rain likely in the morning and early afternoon, then rain or snow late in the afternoon with a high in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 41 degrees and overcast skies. Lambert Field is reporting 41 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I see. I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Less than 24 hours, it seemed like, before the political dust had settled, before people could even get the full sentence of "we're number one" out of their mouths, Boy George looked into the face of America and said, "Oh, by the way, I'm accepting the resignation of Donald Rumsfeld, and I am looking to appoint a man by the name of Gates." Do you know that there were reports that people in Iraq, citizens in the streets of Iraq, cheered at the news that Donald Rumsfeld would no longer be in charge? That's a story. They cheered. So my question to you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, should they be cheering? Is there a difference? Is there much difference between a Donald Rumsfeld and a Robert M. Gates? Well, we're going to have that conversation with the founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, joining us from Washington, D.C., Robert Perry. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Very good. Describe Bob Gates. What's he like?
Well, Bob Gates is actually a fairly engaging guy. He's had, people describe him as having sort of Boy Scout looks, which I think is true. I've dealt with him. I dealt with him when I was at Newsweek, and he was at the National Security Council. He's a fairly glib, smooth-talking fellow. He's a career intelligence guy. He worked for the CIA going back to the 1960s. But he's more political than that. He was often assigned to the National Security Council staff under various presidents. So he's more politically attuned than the traditional CIA people.
And by politically attuned, I'd like to continue that conversation, but we're going to take a break right now. I'm talking to Robert Perry, founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, joining us from Washington, D.C. We're talking about Bob Gates, the presumptive replacement for Donald Rumsfeld. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake-Up Call. Stay with us.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
School, church, civic, and other nonprofit organizations often have tight budgets. At WGNU, we understand that and remind you that we can help. If you know of a nonprofit group that would like WGNU to help promote events and ongoing programs free of charge, just send a fax with all the information to our public service department at area code 314-454-6609. Request must be submitted 2 weeks in advance of any event. WGNU Radio reserves the right to edit or reject any submission because of time constraints and objectionable or commercial content.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson, inviting you to join me every Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. You'll hear stories of people just like you who are overcoming obstacles and making the difference in the lives of others. You're invited to share your thoughts. You know people are what matter most to me, and I enjoy talking with you and helping you reach your highest goals. Join me for the Laurie Fulkerson Show, Monday morning at 10 on AM 920 WGNU. We're here to discuss what matters most to you.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I thank my God I've got something within me. Oh, 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 oh yes. So something within me. Something within me, that vanishes pain. Something within me, Lord, that I can explain.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning I am talking to the founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, joining us from Washington, D.C., Robert Perry. And we are talking about George Bush's appointment of Donald Rumsfeld's replacement with Bob Gates. And Robert, welcome back. We were talking about the political savviness of a Bob Gates. Can you expound upon that?
Well, Gates was a key figure in the early 1980s of what was called politicizing the Central Intelligence Agency. Up until that point, the CIA, the analytical side, had this reputation for fairly good analytical research. They would provide the information to the presidents whether they wanted to hear it or not. In fact, sometimes they took sort of pride in telling the presidents what they didn't want to hear because they felt they were the protectors of that information and didn't want to see it polluted. When Gates came in the early 1980s under Ronald Reagan with Bill Casey as CIA director, Gates mounted essentially a deconstruction of that ethos inside the CIA. He was made head of the Directorate of Intelligence, that's the analytical division, and he essentially purged analysts, especially in the Soviet division, who were seeing signs of weakness in the Soviet Union. They were at that point noticing that the Soviet Union was falling way behind technologically and economically, and that it was having trouble sustaining its empire and its military. So, but Gates did not want that. That was not the answer that the Reagan administration wanted at the time, because they were saying that the Soviets were on the march, 10 feet tall, threatening America in many ways that the CIA was undercutting, saying that, no, these guys have feet of clay. So Gates essentially drove this hardline view of the Soviet Union, which supported what the White House wanted, but turned out to be false. As we know, the Soviet Union was in decline during that period and ultimately collapsed at the end of the decade. And one of the reasons the CIA missed that, they've always been mocked for missing the fall of the CIA, of the Soviet Union, you know, their principal target. But part of the reason was that so many of the people who'd been pointing to these problems had been forced out. So Gates really, well, he brought in this ethos of, you know, tell the policymakers what they want to hear rather than what the facts are. And many of his people stayed on. He became CIA director in 91 under the first Bush. And even though he left when Clinton came in 93, Gates' legacy remained. Many of his top people who he put in place bureaucratically to see this politicization through remained in place into this presidency, and they were there sort of helping to massage some of the intelligence that led us into Iraq.
And he was also involved in the Iran-Contra affair.
Right. He was there are allegations that tie him into this even in the 1980 time frame when there were suspicions, and I guess some of that's now been pretty well supported, that the Republicans were making their own contacts with the Iranians in 1980 when President Carter was still in office, that there was this hostage crisis going on with Iran, which undermined President Carter quite a bit. He was trying to get them out, and the Republicans were making back-channel contacts using some CIA people, some of whom had been there under the first George Bush when he was CIA director in 76, and were very close to him, and they left the CIA under Carter, and then they sort of helped the Republicans make these connections directly with the Iranians. And Gates is alleged to have been involved in that. So he was involved in the secret operations behind the scene, which really began in 81, to ship arms via Israel to Iran. And then, of course, that leads up to, by the mid-80s, the so-called Iran-Contra shipments, which were a continuation and somewhat expansion of what had been going on earlier. Also during this period, because you had the Iran-Iraq war going on, the Reagan administration secretly was also aiding the Iraqis. It was kind of a tilting back and forth where, you know, the Iranians would get the upper hand, the U.S. would start shipping things or helping to ship things to the Iraqis, to Saddam Hussein's government. So this was all happening behind the scenes, and one of the key players, according to a number of witnesses and documents now, was Robert Gates, and he's always denied knowledge of these things. When he was up for CIA director in 87, when he first was proposed for that job, he had to withdraw because of grave doubts about his honesty.
Can we talk about why people should be concerned about this now?
Well, you know, it's certainly something that should be explained to the American people, and obviously, if Gates has been lying to the Congress about his role in these matters, which got him through the confirmation process in 91, his honesty certainly is a factor. If he has secret relations with people or had secret relations with people in Iran and Iraq, two countries at the top of our military concerns today, that also should be laid out. You don't want someone who's Secretary of Defense who can be blackmailed by someone who might be an enemy or an adversary. You also have this question of politicized intelligence, which has been at the heart of how the United States got into Iraq, the failure to have really tough standards in evaluating the suspicions about Iraq's WMD has caused a great deal of trouble. So all these three key elements are right at the top of the list of what a defense secretary should be worried about at this point.
And should we also be concerned, Robert, about the fact that when Gates was engaging in this politicization of the CIA, he was doing it at the behest of one of the people he was doing it at the behest of was George Bush's father. And when we see people like Baker being brought in to create this consortium or this group of people on what we should do in Iraq, should we be concerned that old habits will continue on?
Well, Gates is pretty much a Bush family guy, and he, like Baker, he's closely associated with Bush's George W. Bush's father. They knew each other back in 76 when George H.W. Bush was CIA director. They worked together apparently in 1980 kind of secretly, and then more openly in 81 through the Reagan years. And he was then basically rescued in 89. He was put on the first Bush's National Security Council staff as deputy NSC advisor, and then was promoted to CIA director in 91. So he's always had this very very close tie to the Bush family, and he's been associated with the Bush first Bush library in Texas. So he's been someone that has been under their wing. He's like Baker in some ways, although Baker's probably has higher standing as kind of the chief lawyer for handling their problems. But Bobby Gates has been a kind of fixer too for the Bush family.
And when we look at you spoke briefly about the honesty of a Bob Gates. Can we also talk about the integrity of a Bob Gates with respect to his relationship with Jimmy Carter and the October surprise?
Well, one of the documents that came out after the confirmation hearings in 91, and in those hearings, some of this was sort of known, alleged, but not really investigated. There was an effort to sort of just get him through. He was very close to Senator Boren, who was head of the Intelligence Committee, and he thanked Boren in Gates' memoirs. Gates thanks Boren for having pushed him through. So these things weren't really seriously investigated then, but since then more evidence has come out. There was a remarkable document that I obtained, which was sent by the Russian government to the U.S. Congress in 1993. It was a review of their intelligence information, what the KGB had, on these secret dealings relating to the U.S. and Iran, and the Russian government in this report alleged that Gates had been involved in these secret contacts with Iran dating back to 1980. So that certainly should be explored. It was, instead of being explored in 1993 when it arrived, it was essentially hidden, and I unearthed it in a box of documents that hadn't been published by this investigative task force.
Well, if he knew this, if he had this information, what should we make of that?
Well, if he's been lying to Congress and lying to the American people and involved in something behind the back of Jimmy Carter, the guy who was his boss at the time, it says a lot about who this guy is. There was also in 95, another NSC official for Reagan named Howard Teicher came forward in an affidavit, a sworn affidavit in a criminal case in Florida, and alleged that Gates had been involved in helping to arm Saddam Hussein, something that Gates has also denied.
Isn't that a bit of a problem for him to now be? isn't that a bit?
Well, right now I think a lot of the Democrats are so happy with the idea of getting Rumsfeld out that they're willing to sort of close their eyes on Gates. But I think, you know, as a journalist, my feeling is let's get these facts out and see where they go.
And do you think that most Americans would be stunned to know that the man that is under consideration for replacing Rumsfeld is a man that is reported to have given arms to the person that we were supposed to go in there and get?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that the U.S. government knew that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction was that we helped him get them. That was part of our covert policy back in the 80s. There was a certain amount of, you know, that era was because the focus was so much on the Soviet Union and in playing these various games. That's one reason the U.S. government during this period supported Osama bin Laden, because he was fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. So he was someone that the United States, that administration saw as an ally. So sometimes things you think it might make sense in the short term end up having long-term damaging consequences.
And the challenges for the questions to be asked to remind people of this.
Well, I think certainly if there are people in these countries that might have information that they could use against Gates, it's something that the United States government should know now rather than later. You know, if someone is in a position where someone could come forward after confirmation hearings and say, oh, by the way, the defense secretary was doing this or that, and it raises serious questions about his ethics and honesty, I think, you know, it does put him in a tough spot.
We're going to take a break. My guest this hour is Robert Perry, founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com. We're talking about the upcoming confirmation hearings for Bob Gates, who will be replacing, who George Bush wants to replace, Donald Rumsfeld. And stay with me for my next hour, because I will be talking to a survivor of a Guatemalan army massacre in 1982, Edwin Cannell Vicente, and he's going to be talking about how the School of America has helped arm and educate those people who tortured him. You don't want to miss that in the next hour. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Breakfast at Sonic. Eastbound 70 at Bryan Road and 79. Slow traffic there. Eastbound 44 between Soccer Park and 270. No problems to report. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Marshall. Look for stop and go traffic. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and 270. Look for some congestion there. Eastbound 40 from Ballast through Lindbergh, it is slow. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry all the way to West Florissant. Look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound 270 at New Florissant 170. Look for slow traffic in the right lane. Westbound 5570 is slow on the bridge. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is starting to stack up as you roll into the landing. And northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for delays at the top of that ramp, as well as McKenzie just north of Gravois. There's an accident reported there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Breakfast at Sonic. Driving to Sonic this morning for their steak, egg, and cheese burrito, thinly sliced steak, egg, and cheese wrapped in a warm tortilla, the hearty way to start your day. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain this morning, and partly sunny this afternoon, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Moving on to Tuesday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. Tuesday evening, rain likely, and Wednesday, rain likely in the morning, then becoming an early afternoon, then rain or snow is possibly later in the afternoon. Highs in the lower 30s, snow on Wednesday. So bundle up. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. Currently we have 41 degrees under overcast skies. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. For the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Hail caller, away!
Folks, that's the Lone Ranger. Catch him weekdays at 5 p.m. here on WGNU.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour we are having a conversation with Robert Perry. He's the founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. And let me get to a caller or two here. Bob, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, I do, Liz, and thank you, and thank Mr. Perry. My question is, a lot of this information that we are finding out now about Gates and Bush, the first Bush and Reagan, was that high crimes and misdemeanors were committed because they had evidence. His private secretary, if you remember the movie that came out, it wasn't a movie, it was a documentary of evidence, where his secretary went to France with him. When they made this deal to hold our hostages in Iran until after they became president. And if people have forgotten, they released the hostages on the very day that Reagan was president, was made president, and George Bush vice president. And is there any way that we can go back and get Inouye's notes, who was heading that committee at that time in Congress for the Iran-Contra, and every time something came out about what happened before they found out that they were giving weapons to both Iran and Iraq, that he would not let them talk about it. They would go into special session. Does he think that that information could get from under seal and we really find out the truth? See, I'm ready to see someone go to jail. I'm tired of this stuff of talking about nonpartisan. It's time for someone to go to jail.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Robert.
Well, I mean, the caller makes a fair point. There have been a lot of very inadequate investigations that were conducted during the relating to the 1980s.
I mean, they were so bad that Gates even complained about the investigation of Ollie North.
Well, you know, and some of the same people on all sides keep being recycled. Lee Hamilton, who was a congressman from Indiana, was a sort of a key figure in doing these inadequate investigations. He was so determined to be considered bipartisan that he would often accept the cover stories. I dealt with Lee Hamilton going back to when I was with the Associated Press. I did the early stories about Oliver North's network, and he was head of the Intelligence Committee, and he and Dick Cheney, who was then on the committee, and Henry Hyde and others went over to the White House and essentially asked North, are these stories about you're running this secret Contra aid operation true? And North said, no, they weren't. That's when he lied to Congress. But they accepted his word. They did not really investigate. And then when that blew up anyway, Lee Hamilton was made head of the Iran-Contra investigation. And in that one, he bought into these cover stories that sort of blamed it on Ollie North and a few men of zeal and sort of ignored the very strong evidence that later was developed by Lawrence Walsh, the special prosecutor, that Reagan and Bush were deeply involved, as was the CIA. Then when we started tracking back where the origins of the Iran-Contra scandal came from, because we kept finding out that the weapon shipments did not begin in 85 and 86, as we had been told, but they actually dated back to 81, and that the Reagan administration had permitted the Israelis to make these shipments starting right immediately upon taking office. So when we went back looking at that and came upon more and more and more evidence that there had been these contacts between Republicans and the Iranians during the campaign in 1980, then Lee Hamilton was made head of that investigation, and which was perhaps the most bizarre investigation of them all, because the evidence went one way, pointing to Republican guilt, but Hamilton trying to be bipartisan went the other. And actually, what an interesting thing happened is that report was being prepared in the December of '92. This is after Bush had lost and Clinton had won. So there was really no interest on either side, the Democratic or Republican side, to really push it. But in December of '92, a lot of evidence began pouring into this task force, pointing to Republican guilt. And the chief counsel, Larry Barcella, goes to Hamilton and says, we've got to extend this investigation several months to deal with all this new evidence. And Hamilton said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to end it. So they put out a report saying that nothing happened. Ironically, 2 days before that report was supposed to be released, which was January 13th, 1993, this Russian report came in. Hamilton had asked the Russians what they knew about it, and they sent him a report. They had the KGB go back through their files and see what intelligence information they had gleaned during this period, and they sent this report via the U.S. Embassy in Moscow saying that, yes, it had happened, that both Reagan and Carter had been trying to make deals with the Iranians in 1980, and that George H.W. Bush and Bob Gates and others were directly involved in these contacts and meetings. And when that arrived on January 11th, 1993, 2 days before the report was supposed to come out, it was already at the printers, the decision was made to simply hide it.
Mm.
And it wasn't until late 94 and early 95 when I accessed their unpublished files, which were stored away on Capitol Hill, that I was able to find this document. A remarkable historical record, by the way, even if it's whatever the Russians, however good their information may or may not be, the fact that the Russians in this post-Cold War, you know, period were willing to share intelligence files with the United States is quite stunning. But it was all hidden from the American people, and we weren't supposed to know that there was this evidence. We were supposed to sort of believe everything had happened nicely, and that George H.W. Bush was allowed to go into retirement with his reputation intact, even though there was evidence, very strong evidence, that he didn't deserve that.
What are the chances of, during this confirmation period for Bob Gates, for any of these questions to be asked? Or any of these issues to be explored? Are there any people that would sit on, would it be the Intelligence Committee?
No, it's going before the Armed Services Committee.
Defense
Secretary. I put after the nomination last week, I did a story entitled The Secret World of Robert Gates for ConsortiumNews.com, and that has now been circulated around quite widely since it deals with a lot of this information that very few people really have. And some of the CIA people who had worked under Gates and were quite upset by his politicization of the agency have also stepped forward. People like Mel Goodman, who was one of the great Kremlinologists at CIA before Gates came in and shoved him out, and others who've been sending this material to Senator Levin and others on the committee, urging them to, you know, at least make Gates respond before he's given this important job.
And he's been grilled before by Democrats, hasn't he?
Right, but it's always been the same thing where, well, in 87, the Democrats blocked his confirmation to be CIA director because they felt that he was lying to them on Iran-Contra, which it appears he was. But in 91, when he was sort of reappointed to that job by the first Bush, David Boren was the head of the Intelligence Committee, and he was Gates' personal friend, and saw to it that these questions were not seriously examined and pushed him through. Ironically, the guy who was Boren's chief of staff and handling this sort of cover-up investigation was George Tenet.
Mm.
And Tenet later then, of course, goes to the CIA as first deputy and then director under Clinton. And one of the reasons that the senior Bush told his son to keep Tenet on in 2001 was because the senior Bush knew that Tenet had really carried water for the family in helping Gates get confirmed in 91. So there's kind of this little incestuous group that just seems to continue to sort of circle around Washington, coming in and out of power.
And do you see, is there anybody that we should be keeping our eyes on in terms of asking any of the tough questions?
Well, I really don't know whether, you know, the Democrats obviously are so eager to get rid of Rumsfeld that they seem to be prepared to just look the other way on Gates. But, you know, I think that doesn't mean that the American people can't say, hold it, you know, before you give this guy his coronation, let's at least make sure that he doesn't have these dark secrets in his past that could redound very negatively against the United States.
What skills does he bring to the position of Secretary of Defense?
Well, I mean, obviously Gates has had a long history dealing with national security matters, although sometimes mishandling them. You know, he was the guy who gave a speech in 89 attacking Gorbachev, questioning whether this is back when there were some on the right who didn't believe that the Soviet Union was really serious about changing. This is right before the collapse. So Gates was supposedly a Soviet expert who purged the agency of his people who said, no, hold it, the Soviet Union is cracking apart. He refused to accept that and then drove them out and then sort of forced his own views on the agency. And so he was wrong about that. He also was, of course, implicated in Iran-Contra in terms also of politicizing that intelligence, because there was a key NIE that on Iran becoming more moderate that cleared the way for these arms shipments. So there's been a number of times where Gates has been on the wrong side of issues, at least factually speaking. But he's often served as his political masters, but he's certainly informed. He's knowledgeable. I think he's not as hard and nasty as Rumsfeld has been. He probably would be more of a conciliatory guy when it comes to dealing with the generals. And he's not as much an ideologue as some of the folks that operated under Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld, of course, was provided a home for many of the neoconservatives who developed even more. More outlandish intelligence on Iraq than the CIA would even do.
Well, one of the things that Rumsfeld has done, part of his legacy, was to kind of a military transformation, cutting back on the military. Is Gates going to bring that same type of energy, and how will the generals look at Gates?
Well, it's hard to say. I think the generals generally feel that Gates will be an improvement over Rumsfeld from their point of view. I mean,
easy to do, isn't it?
Yes, I think they're obviously in rebellion against Rumsfeld, and that's been clear for a while. I think whatever Gates would bring, it's on that level in terms of reorganizing. It's not clear how he reorganized the CIA was not particularly beneficial to getting good intelligence out of the CIA. That we can now say, I think.
We're going to take another break. My name is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Robert Perry. He's the founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, joining us from Washington, D.C. We're talking about Bob Gates and Donald Rumsfeld. And don't forget, in the next hour, Edwin Canil Vicente, a survivor of the Guatemalan Army Massacre in 1982, will be talking to us. We'll be in the studio to talk about how many of the perpetrators of his massacre were trained by the Army School of Americas. We'll be talking about that and much more. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. Learn how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. That's Design 411 at noon, Wednesdays on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. At 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU, 920 a.m.
This is Pastor Divine Crusoe. Please join me on Monday evenings from 8 o'clock to 8:30 with Unfolding Destiny broadcast. This broadcast is designed for those who are sick and shut in, those who are broken and need to be mended, those who are out of their place and cannot find their way, and those who know that their destiny is predicated upon their faith and that it is divine in ministry. So please tune in every Monday evening at 8 o'clock with Pastor Divine Crusoe and Unfolding Destiny broadcast.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Robert Perry, founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com, joining us from Washington, D.C. We're talking about the Bob Gates investigation, the Bob Gates appointment, the Bob Gates situation here, and I'm going to get to some of my callers here. Mildred, you have a question for Robert Perry.
Yes, I do, and also a comment. I remember the Iran-Contra investigation. I remember every detail of it. I remember the guy who headed the CIA at that time. I think it was Casey. I'm not sure. But I remember he took a poison pill and killed himself. They found him in his bedroom. and Bob Gates was a member of that team at that time. Oliver North lied continuously under oath during the investigation of Iran-Contra. I remember all of this well. We are still living in perilous times. And there is a man called Gates. Baker. Bob Baker, after doing his shuttle diplomacy in the Bush administration, came back here one day and told us, we are in the Middle East to stay. So all of these CIA operatives who have taken over this government, they know the ins and outs of secrecy, and we are held hostage to all of this.
Thanks.
Can you comment, please?
Thanks for your call, Mildred.
Well, obviously, William Casey did die. He did fall ill as the Iran-Contra investigation was really gearing up in the fall of 86. He was diagnosed having a brain tumor and passed away in May of 87. Gates succeeded him. He'd been Casey's deputy and became acting CIA director upon Casey's incapacitation. But you know, it is certainly true that there are that there has been this sort of team that has revolved around, especially the elder Bush, George H.W. Bush, for some years. In my last book, Secrecy and Privilege: Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq, I go through how this happened. It's kind of a remarkable story about how this group built up its political clout. George H.W. Bush was particularly good in terms of having, you know, this golden Rolodex of people he could turn to, and they would fix things. And you know, the reason I started the book really with Watergate was that's where George H.W. Bush is brought in by Nixon with the idea that because of all these great connections that Bush had, that he could bail Nixon out of his trouble. And I think Bush did a pretty good job, although ultimately that failed and Nixon was driven from office. But that was the role that they saw Bush having, and eventually Bush parlayed that skill into building his own political career, first as vice president under Reagan and then president. And then because he was not held to account for much of what he did in the 80s and early 90s, things like the Iraqgate affair where Saddam Hussein had been foolishly supported by the Americans during some of this time in secret, and as well as the Iran initiatives, Bush was able to walk away with his reputation more or less intact, and then his son was able to come back. So we've had this sort of long-standing situation surrounding the Bush family where they have wielded enormous power inside the United States.
If you were on the committee that will be engaging in the questioning for the confirmation hearings, during the confirmation hearings of Gates, what would be one of the questions that you would ask him?
Well, I would certainly have Gates answer. I would certainly bring people like Howard Teicher in. Howard Teicher was an NSC official under Reagan who filed this sworn affidavit in 1995 in a Florida case, which described in some detail the secret policy of aiding the Iraqis, which Gates has always denied being involved in. There were other witnesses who described the same thing, people who gave sworn testimony under oath, but all this was ignored or poo-pooed during that time. But Teicher, having come out in 95, has never really been questioned. The Clinton people didn't want to deal with it because he was, in effect, he complicated one of their criminal prosecutions, and they were quite upset. But they never really went to the bottom of Teicher's allegations. And since Gates had become a professor or a president of a university in Texas, there wasn't really much urgency to it. But now I think it would be time to get Teicher before a committee, swear him in under oath, and see what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it would be worth going back to the Russian government. This is not insignificant that they claim to have evidence of Gates being involved in illegal activities, that is, secret contacts against President Carter when he was supposedly serving President Carter. So whether the Russian government would open up and say, here's what our evidence is, but those are kinds of questions that should be done. As well as putting Gates under oath and having him go back through this and seeing what he's willing to deny and confirm, and he was allowed essentially to sort of skate past these questions, although some of them weren't known to the detail we have them now. But he was allowed to skate past some of these issues back in '91 when when he was last up for confirmation. But we now know more, and that history should be brought back and expanded, and the truth should come out as best we can get it out.
You have a question for Robert Perry.
I have several questions. You know, Mr. Perry, do you know whether the there's Gates and Gates is a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, as well as Rumsfeld, who's going out, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice. Also, through the Council of Foreign Relations, is there going to be about one world government? And I see impeachment is not on the table with Nancy Pelosi, which I hope they will at least investigate. And also, do the Council of Foreign Relations tell the Democrats and the Republican Party what they're doing? Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, frankly, I'm not sure if Gates is or is not a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Many people are, and not just Republicans and Democrats, but also senior editors of news organizations. When I was at Newsweek, there were top editors on the CFR, and I always felt they kind of compromised our professional objectivity, because this was even though they dealt rather broadly with foreign policy, It did affect, I think, some of the judgments of those editors who were felt themselves part of the club rather than people outside who represent the American people as eyes and ears. So as far as Gates, I would not be surprised that he'd be on the CFR, since there are many people involved in foreign policy are. But I just don't know if he is.
Why the rush, Robert? Why the rush for this confirmation hearing?
Well, partly because the Democrats...
Let me ask you, does it feel like a rush?
Oh, I think there's no question they're rushing it. They're trying to get it through the lame duck session. And part of it is that the Democrats had made the issue of getting rid of Rumsfeld a key part in the campaign. And so the day after the election, Bush says, okay, Rumsfeld's gone. But Rumsfeld will stay until Gates is confirmed. So the Democrats find themselves in a bit of a quandary. They've been given what they asked for. But to get it, they have to agree to this guy who's a Bush family apparatchik, if you will. It could be that they will think twice, but it's also possible that maybe a deputy defense secretary could fill in. But the argument is being made that, well, we're at a time of war. We can't have this sort of uncertainty at the top of the Defense Department, and therefore we must act immediately. But sometimes it's best to know what you're buying before you buy it.
And in terms of what the George W. Bush gets with an appointment of Gates?
Well, he gets a loyal family ally, someone who...
Protector of secrets.
Right. And that's exactly... I think that in many ways, in 91, when Gates was put in at CIA, part of the goal there was to make sure that many of the secrets that were still there... that the Iran-Contra special prosecutor Lawrence Walsh was trying to get, that they would be held back as much as possible. And one has to remember, the first thing that George W. Bush did when he took office in 2001, on January 20th, 2001, he signed an executive order preventing the release of documents, historical records, from the Reagan and Bush presidencies. They were the first presidencies that were going to be covered by the post-Watergate Records Act that would have forced their release. But the first thing that Bush did was sign this order. And then after 9/11, Bush expanded that order to say that those documents cannot be released without the approval of the principals or their descendants. So in effect, that would mean that if you take 12 years of George H.W. Bush as vice president and president, and George W. as 8 years as president, Jenna Bush will have control of 20 years of American history, in effect, at some point.
Oh, well, that's just scary all over the place.
I'm sure she'll do well with it.
that's just super scary. So, in terms of the article that you wrote, and its distribution all over the place out there, what kind of impact do you see it having?
Well, I don't know. I mean, clearly, it's gone to a number of people. Whether they are so eager to rush this through or not, or whether they stop and think twice, I don't know. I can't predict that, but. It's important, I think, that the American people have a sense that this is not quite the beautiful deal that it's being presented as. There are other questions that still must be answered, should be answered.
And will you be there at the confirmation hearings?
I'm not sure. I don't often do that, but I may. I mean, I might just cover it more by television and talking to people. I'm more of an investigative reporter than the guy who shows up and goes to the hearings.
Robert Perry, founder and editor of ConsortiumNews.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, and in our next hour, we're going to be having a discussion with Edwin Camille Vicente. He is a survivor of a Guatemalan army massacre in 1982. He's going to be speaking about his work with the Association for Justice and Reconciliation Act. And this is an act, these are efforts to hold the perpetrators of these types of horrific crimes legally accountable for their crimes. And, of course, as many of your listeners know, that many of the people that were trained and performed these massacres were trained at the Army School of Americas. I'm Liz Brown. We'll be back with Edwin Cannell of Vicente. Stay with us.
More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Alvin.
I have a dream that one day...
Well, the dream may or may not be realized, but today is an important day in the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. Groundbreaking is getting underway on the National Mall on a memorial for the slain civil rights leader. Illinois Senator Barack Obama describes what the monument will look like and how its design is symbolic of King's message.
He said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I love that idea, that sometimes we don't see the progress that we're making, but it's there.
President Bush, former President Clinton, and Oprah Winfrey are among those taking part in the ceremony. The president now is meeting with a bipartisan group looking into strategies for Iraq. More from ABC's Martha Raddatz at the White House.
It is not expected that the Iraq study group will suggest a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops, as Democrats are now suggesting.
The president said he is open to fresh ideas, but he is adamant about not pulling troops out before the job is done.
The violence, meanwhile, continues in Iraq. A California man is due in federal court today. He is suspected of mailing threatening letters to a number of high-profile people, including David Letterman, Jon Stewart, and incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Authorities say the letters contain some type of a white powder. It's not a good morning to be driving around parts of Oregon. A nasty storm brought down trees, power lines, and more.
Anything can be blown into the road and create a hazard. Not just trees, but even garbage cans.
That's Dave Thompson with the State Department of Transportation. He says if you're going to be in that area, you better be careful if you're driving. Barat need not worry about this.
Come see my film. If it's not success, I will be executed.
Yeah, the movie starring Sacha Baron Cohen as an often offensive Kazakh journalist again topped the box office this weekend. It earned $29 million. This is ABC News.
I'm a mother of three, and I'm just beginning a whole new career. I'm enjoying this part of my life every bit as much as when I was winning 18 Grand Slam tennis titles. And with delicious new CitraCal Creamy Bites, I even enjoy taking the calcium I need to help prevent osteoporosis. I'm Chris Evert. I'm 51, and I am strong. Tell us about a strong woman you know at StandStrong.com. CitraCal Calcium. Stand strong.
It's not too early to be thinking about the holidays, but is it too early to start enjoying all that holiday deliciousness? Absolutely not. Visit Sam's Club this weekend for the holiday taste of Sam's Club and start revving up those taste buds. We'll be preparing samples of everything from savory meats to delectable desserts, so you can taste how appetizing and easy a holiday meal can be with Sam's Club. Join us at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this Friday through Sunday, November 17th through the 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See samsclub.com for details.
You may not find too many parents in New Zealand who will complain about their kids spending their spare time text messaging. ABC's Brad Farrell explains.
TextSpeak is the mobile phone text messaging shorthand. For example, TXT is used for the word text, the letters C and U for see you later. New Zealand's Qualifications Authority has announced that high school students may use text-speak in most national exams this year, although it discourages students from using anything other than full English, especially on English exams. Critics say the use of text-speak will degrade the main qualification test for New Zealand's high school students. Brad Farrell, ABC News.
Well, you probably don't need an extended warranty on that big screen TV that you're going to buy before Thanksgiving football game, so you can watch them in almost life size. Consumer Reports magazine says the warranty that you get with the purchase is usually fine. You may want to buy extended protection, for example, if you're getting a new PC. There's more information in the magazine's latest issue. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by TomTom.com. In the news in your 8 o'clock hour, police are trying to identify a woman who was found murdered in Wellston over the weekend. Police say a victim was discovered in a vacant, burned-out building along the 6200 block of Theodosia yesterday. Investigators believe she was killed at another location before her body was dumped. She appears to be in her late 30s. The cause of death is pending autopsy results. Anyone with any information is asked to call the St. Louis County Police at 314-889-2341. A North St. Louis man is facing charges with police standoff following a police standoff over the weekend. Authorities say 49-year-old suspect held police at bay for several hours yesterday morning in his home along the 5200 block of Thecla. This was after he fired shots inside the home and refused to come out. No serious injuries were reported. The man's name is being withheld pending charges. A man is dead in the following a weekend accident in Maryland Heights. 19-year-old Ivan Herrera of St. Louis County was killed Saturday afternoon after he crashed his car into a guardrail along Page and Lindbergh and went down the embankment. Herrera's two female passengers were seriously injured. And finally this hour, an overnight fire is being blamed for heavily damaging a South County restaurant. Firefighters were called to Elime Pizza and More along the 1200 block of Telegraph Lawn 2 o'clock this morning. No serious injuries were reported. Cause is still under investigation. That is a look at this hour's traffic, this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by TomTom. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen, and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Now, taking a look at your WGNU traffic, this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Toyota. Westbound 40, there are two accidents on right shoulder and east and west of Lindbergh. There's traffic slowing near Brentwood. Northbound 55 from Green Park through Rivas Barracks. There's a disabled tractor trailer on right shoulder. Eastbound 70 at Bryan through 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park to 270, look for slow traffic as you're getting on to 270. Northbound 270 from Gravois through Marshall, expect stop and go. Eastbound 40 between 141 and 270, look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and West Florissant, expect delays there as well. Westbound 40 between McCausland and 170, look for very heavy volume due to those earlier accidents. Westbound 5570, all lanes from 3rd Street and 4th Street on in. You can expect congestion all the way into downtown this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow. And northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the PSB, look for slow traffic there. Rivas Barracks at 55, look for an accident. Clayton at Highway 109, look for an accident. And westbound Eadsbridge traffic, you can expect some delays this hour as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Through December 15th, visit your St. Louis Toyota Service Centers and join the donation drive for the neonate MRI shuttle for St. Louis Children's Hospital. Toyota, a smart way to move forward. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Mostly cloudy, a chance of rain this morning, and partly sunny by the afternoon, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s for Tuesday. Mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. Tuesday evening, rain likely. It'll drop into the 40s. Then on Wednesday, windy and colder, rain likely in the morning and afternoon, and rain or snow is likely late in the afternoon on Wednesday with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have Overcast skies. Our current temperature sits at 41 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 41 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. The number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And please don't forget that this show is archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, you can go get your hour at WhiteRoseSociety.org. We are also streamed on the Internet. That means that we can be reached 24/7 from Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can catch the Wake Up Call at www.wgnu.net. It seems rather fitting that in the last hour we were talking about Bob Gates with my guest Robert Perry. Given Robert Gates's behavior and contributions to Iran-Contra, to the other struggles and acts of corruption throughout Central America, it seems rather fitting that we were talking about him, because now, today, we're going to be talking to this hour Edwin Canil Vicente. He is a survivor of a Guatemalan massacre in 1982. And I think that I would like to begin this conversation with explaining that Mr. Vicente does not speak English. We have an interpreter joining us this morning. So the two voices that you hear, and could you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
I'm Marilyn Lorenz, and I'm the program coordinator of the Interfaith Committee on Latin America.
And I appreciate you, Marilyn, coming in this morning so much and to be our interpreter this morning. And I would like to start by asking Edwin to talk about the war of 32 years that engulfed Guatemala.
Guatemala experimentó durante los años.
Muy bien, yo quisiera decirles que durante ese momento muy trágico de nuestro país,
during the very tragic time in our country,
muchísimas aldeas fueron arrasadas.
Many areas were destroyed.
Y dentro de todas esas aldeas, uno de ellos fue mi comunidad.
And among those, one of those was my community.
Hay un sinnúmero de casos de testigos que hablan de casos que es lo que pasó en su comunidad.
There are hundreds of witnesses that talk about these massacres in the villages.
Personalmente, soy único sobreviviente de una de esas masacres.
Personally, the sole survivor of the massacre of my village.
Can we talk about the historical events that brought us to this place? Who were the people involved in this?
Los hechos históricos que llega a esta guerra. ¿Cuál personas fue metido en este asunto de la guerra entre 1950 hasta the presente?
And we have to take a break, and we'll come back with an answer to that.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be back.
Why fight the holiday crowds when Raglan and Sons offers the right way to shop? From binoculars to Bible bags, lamps to luggage and learning toys, it's all at raglanandsons.net. Order online or get a catalog by calling 1-800-577-5786, locally 314-968-2789, or pick one up at the Olivet Great Harvest Bread Company, 9449 Olive Boulevard, just west of I-170. Use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Over 3,000 children in the Metro St. Louis area need quality foster parenting and stable homes. They need homes free of violence, abuse, and neglect. They need homes complete with consistency and caring and strength. Foster families can provide the building blocks necessary in establishing positive patterns of behavior for children. Urban Behavioral Health Care Institute is looking for caring individuals interested in serving as a link to permanent family living. Call 314-577-5000 or visit urbanbehav.com. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryan.
Redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand alone? aside and look. Some say it's just a party.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and this hour I am talking to Edwin Canil Vicente, a survivor of the Guatemalan massacre in 1982, and he is being interpreted by Marilyn Lorenz. She is the program coordinator for St. Louis's Interfaith Committee on Latin America. Welcome back. The question that we ended with before the last break was the getting to the historical context of what led up to the massacre.
Ah, muy bien. Yo quisiera hablar de un poco de la historia desde Jacobo Arbenz Guzmán.
I want to begin with the history of Guatemala from the time of Jacobo Arbenz.
Si recordamos, en ese momento histórico Guatemala estaba empezando a subir en cuanto a desarrollo del
país. This was a time when Guatemala was beginning its development. This is about 1940s, 50s.
Había un gran programa del gobierno guatemalteco de Jacobo Arbenz de sacar al país dentro de la pobreza y hacer una distribución más general de la riqueza.
The government of Jacobo Arbenz was beginning an attempt to take the country out of poverty by taking the wealth from the wealthy and giving it to the poor.
Lamentablemente, esto se aprovechó un momento por este gobierno de los Estados Unidos de acusar a este gobierno de ser comunista.
But unfortunately, the United States government then declared that the Guatemalan government was communist.
Esto se debió de que este gobierno había expropiado grandes cantidades de terreno a la United Fruit.
But the deal was that the United States had expropriated land that belonged to the United Fruit Company.
Entonces esto fue algo muy molesto para esa empresa y los años que vinieron este gobierno fue acusado de comunista.
So the United Fruit Company was not happy with that idea, so they claimed that the government of Guatemala was communist.
Después de eso, la gente de élite económica que no estaba de acuerdo con este gobierno.
So when the economics community was not in agreement with this position.
Aprovechó el momento para hacer como contacto con la CIA de los Estados Unidos.
So they made contact with the CIA in the United States.
Y entonces con un militar de Castillo Armas vienen ellos y derrocan al gobierno de Jacobo Arbenz.
And the General Castillo Armas carried out a coup against the government of Guatemala.
Esto venía con el apoyo del gobierno de los Estados Unidos y la élite económica de Guatemala.
And this was in conjunction with the government of the United States and the economic community of Guatemala.
Ante esa nueva situación, los que usurparon el poder hicieron leyes en las que se le prohibía a cualquier organización social organizarse con ideas de bienestar social.
So this new situation carried out what usurped the power of the people and made laws that made it illegal to have any kind of organization that would challenge the government.
Entonces se cerró el espacio político para nuevos pensamientos como socialismo y movimientos sociales.
So that just closed the space for any kind of socialist or progressive movements to develop in the country.
Había cierto grupo dentro del ejército que había gustado el plan del gobierno de Jacobo Arbenz.
So there are people within the army that supported the Castillo Armas program.
Y entonces ellos en un principio pensaron luchar de forma política, pero como se les cerró estos espacios,
people within the army wanted to challenge Castillo Armas, and they began to try to struggle politically, but because of the laws, it was not possible.
Entonces de esa manera un grupo del ejército mismo se alza en arma y se hace llamar como grupo guerrillero.
So these people then backed away from the government and formed a guerrilla group, what we call a guerrilla group.
Además, había mucha gente intelectual que compartía mucho el programa de Jacobo Arbenz Guzmán.
And there were intellectuals that had supported the government of Jacobo Arbenz.
Fue así como muchos intelectuales de las universidades también.
These were people from the university that supported those progressive, more development movements.
Exigían un espacio político donde ellos podían expresar sus pensamientos.
They demanded a political space in which they could express their views.
Ante ese nuevo movimiento de guerrillas que había surgido, empieza una persecución contra los intelectuales.
And as those guerrilla groups began to grow, then there was a persecution against the intellectual groups.
Y fue así como desde los 69 empezó la persecución con profesores, con gente de las universidades y estudiantes.
So then from 1969 on there began a persecution of intellectuals and students at the university.
A la par de esto, los grupos mayas de Guatemala empezaron a darse cuenta de que ellos estaban excluidos en el país.
And then at the same time the Mayan people were beginning to awaken and realize that they were excluded from the process of the country.
Era la gente que trabajaba en las fincas, que mantenía todo el trabajo del país, entonces estaban totalmente abandonadas en cuanto a desarrollo.
These were people that worked in the fincas, in the farms, and they basically carried the agricultural business of the country, and they realized that were abandoned by the country. They were left out of the full participation.
Estos grupos empezaron también a exigir un cambio social para el país.
And these people began to demand a social change in the country.
Algunos intelectuales del movimiento maya empezaron como a tener contacto también con los profesores que habían sido perseguidos por sus ideas.
Some of the intellectuals among the Maya community joined with the intellectuals of the Ladino community in the universities and tried to make common cause for progress in the country.
Entonces el movimiento creció cada año más fuerte, se habían unido los pueblos indígenas y los intelectuales.
And this process grew with each year.
Fue de esa manera como el gobierno de Guatemala decide finalmente de exterminar con estos pueblos.
So the government made the decision to exterminate those communities.
Recordemos que la violencia venía desde los 69 de una forma... No estaba haciéndose una violencia a gran escala, era persecución a intelectuales, algunas muertes.
In 1969, it was not widespread violence, it was just little by little, small pockets, persecution of intellectuals and individuals.
Pero ya cuando ellos deciden ir a matar a los pueblos, la violencia subió muchísimo.
¿En cuál año?
Ya fue en el 82, 89.
So between 1982 and 89, then it moved from being intellectuals and small groups into widespread extermination of communities. So the government army went out against the people.
Fue así como el gobierno de Lucas García y de Efraín Ríos Montt.
The notable names here were President Lucas García and Efraín Ríos Montt.
Bajo la administración de ellos sucedieron la mayor escala de crimen en el país.
During the time of these two men was the greatest level of violence in the country.
Y de esa manera fue alcanzado también la violencia en mi comunidad.
And during that time was the violence against my community. We're talking 1982 to about 1989.
How old were you in 1982?
En el 82 yo tenía 6 años.
I was 6 years old in 1982.
So what happened that day?
¿Y qué pasó en la comunidad ese día?
Lo que yo me recuerdo el 13 de febrero del 82.
It was the 13th of February 1982, as I recall.
Llegó una persona de otra comunidad donde habían exterminado casi en su totalidad la población.
Someone arrived from another community that had been almost exterminated.
Entonces nos llevó el aviso diciendo, váyanse porque el ejército está matando a toda la población.
And he said, get out of here, the army's killing everybody.
Fue así como mi comunidad salió del centro urbano antes de ser asesinados.
So people left the community.
Del centro, del, donde vivíamos salieron de sus casas.
People left the center of the town and went back to their houses.
Cuando llegó el ejército ya no había gente en las casas, entonces empieza a buscarlos en las montañas.
So people left their houses, excuse me, I misunderstood. And when the army came, there was no one in the homes.
And before you go on, at 6 years old, did you know about what was going on in the other communities?
A los 6 años supiera lo que estaba pasando en las otras comunidades.
Did you have a sense of
what was going on? Tenía un sentido, un entendimiento de lo que estaba pasando.
Sí, yo me acuerdo cuando venían los aviones a bombardear otras comunidades.
I remember when the planes would come and bomb the communities around us.
Nosotros íbamos a los cerros altos para ver los aviones de lejos.
We would climb up the mountains to look and see what was happening.
Was your family political?
Su familia fue metido en la política. Su familia.
Ajá. Dentro de la guerra sí fuimos alcanzados, pero dentro de la política mis padres no estaban en política ni nada por el
estilo. My parents were not involved in politics in any way.
We're going to take a break. We will be back to continue our conversation with Edwin Canil Vicente, a survivor of the Guatemalan massacre in 1982. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Robitussin. Westbound 40, there are two accidents been cleared. East and west of Lindbergh, residual delays between Big Bend and or Brentwood and McKnight are easing at this hour. Eastbound 70 at Bryan Road and 79, that traffic's looking good. Northbound 270 from Gravois to 44 through Marshall Road. Look for no problems now. Eastbound 40 at 141 and 270 congestion's been cleared there. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and West Florissant. Look for no delays as well. Westbound 5570 from Tudor to the Poplar Street Bridge. You can expect no delays, and everything else is looking pretty good at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Robitussin with formulas for coughs, colds, congestion, and flu. No matter what you've got, there's a Robitussin relief with your name on it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, mostly cloudy, chance of rain this morning and partly sunny by the afternoon, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s. And then Wednesday, things change. Windy, colder, rain likely in the morning and early afternoon, and rain or snow is likely in the afternoon with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 43 degrees and overcast skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, I'm Donna Gamash.
And I'm Carrie Silverstock.
Join us every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. for Make It Happen stories on Women Inspiring Women.
Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers. And we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Around the world, behind the story,
it's the award-winning
wake-up call,
Liz Brown. I had a home with no privacy. I didn't know a thing about my legacy. When I realized you were there for me, called on your name, you came, you did just what you said. For that, I love you forever. You kept your word to me. For that, I love you forever.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I am talking to Edwin Cannell Vicente. He is a survivor of a Guatemalan army massacre in 1982. And I also want to let the audience know that in the next hour we will be just talking to Progressive Democrats of America. We'll be analyzing the election results of last week. We are being told that it's the middle of the middle of the road type of a move shift to the center, if you will. Well, the Progressive Democrats of America are going to break down some of the candidates and why we should be looking at the race differently. But for this hour, we're again talking to Edwin Cannell Vicente. He is from Guatemala. He is speaking Spanish and being interpreted by Marilyn Lorenz. She is the program coordinator for the St. Louis Interfaith Committee on Latin America. Both of you, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Edwin, I would like for you to continue your conversation about that day in 1982 when your community was massacred. You were at home and continue that conversation.
Estaba en casa durante este cuando llegó la Fuerza Armada.
No estábamos en casa, ya nos habíamos retirado.
We were not in our houses, we had gone up into the mountains.
Okay. Y fue de esa manera como nosotros teníamos que evitar los peligros, no estar en...
That's the only way we could arrange to avoid the dangers that were coming.
Was it just you? Was it your family? Were there just children who went to the
mountains? Fue solo niños o toda la familia, toda la gente?
Toda la gente.
It was everybody in the community.
Mm-hmm. Pues cuando nos avisaron que llegó el ejército, mi familia se desplazó a las montañas.
When we were advised that the army was coming, we went up into the mountains as a family.
Y el ejército empezó a buscar a la gente en los bosques.
And so the army began to look for us in the mountains.
Fue de esa manera como el ejército había llegado donde estaba mi familia.
And that's where the army came and found my family.
How many people were hiding in the mountains?
¿Cuánta gente estuvo en el monte?
A toda la aldea andábamos en distintas partes.
¿Pero cuánta gente, más o menos?
Como unas 800 personas.
More or less 800 people.
Okay. Y cuando el ejército, mi familia personalmente había escuchado una balacera muy cerca, entonces de esa manera nos fuimos más por las montañas.
We heard an explosion near us, and so we tried to move away from it.
Pero era porque ya habían masacrado a una familia.
But that what we heard was the massacre of another family.
Posteriormente llegaron donde está mi familia y entonces nos descubrieron y empezaron a matarnos a nosotros.
Con balas.
Con balas.
So they found us and they began to shoot at my family.
En ese momento estaba mi madre, mi abuela, mis hermanas.
So here was my mother, my grandmother, and my brothers and sisters.
Y también mi hermano que tenía apenas como 13 años.
And my 13-year-old brother was there too.
Y varias primas.
And other cousins.
Cuando el ejército nos descubrió, empezó a disparar su arma contra nosotros.
And so when they saw us, they started shooting at us.
Y fue así como yo... al ver todo ese caos y el grito de toda la familia,
and I heard the cries of everyone.
Yo tuve que correr en el bosque para...
I ran into the forest, into the trees.
Y no muy lejos yo me escondí detrás de un tronco viejo.
And I hid behind an old trunk of a tree.
Y vi como el ejército empezó a darles el tiro de gracia a los que todavía estaban.
And I saw the army shooting at those who were still there.
Y mi madre tenía a mi hermanita de 7 meses en sus brazos.
And my mother had the 7-month-old child in her arms.
Pero no, las balas no le habían alcanzado a ella, a mi hermanita.
But they did not shoot my little sister.
Pero mi madre ya estaba muerta.
But my mother was dead.
Y vino un soldado, tomó mi hermanita de los brazos.
And the arm, the soldier came up and took my 7-month-old sister in his hands.
Y con un cuchillo le abrió el estómago.
And took a knife and cut her open.
En ese momento.
In this moment.
Yo no entendía que era, por ejemplo, la muerte o la maldad.
I didn't really understand before that what was death or what badness was.
Y cuando el ejército se retiró de la escena del crimen.
And when the army left there, the soldiers left the scene of the crime.
Yo regresé para ver si ellos iban a levantarse o caminar o.
And I went back to see whether they were all going to get up again.
Porque no entendía, pensé que yo no entendía la muerte, entonces pensé que podíamos seguir viviendo.
I just didn't understand death, so I thought I'd go back and everybody would be alive again.
En ese momento yo entré en la escena del crimen solito.
So I went back to the scene of the crime alone.
Y vi que nadie despertaba, me fui en el bosque.
And nobody woke up, so I ran into the woods.
You were the only one?
Fue la única.
Sí,
el único superviviente.
Sí,
I was the only survivor.
Y entonces, posteriormente volví a regresar para ver, para teniendo la esperanza que íbamos a encontrar.
But then I went back just with the hope that they'd wake up.
Posteriormente sentí un miedo muy fuerte, entonces fue la primera vez que recuerdo que siento un.
Then I just felt this fear. It's the first time I ever experienced anything like this, but it was a very deep fear.
Y entonces me fui en el bosque.
So I left and went into the woods, into the forest.
Y empecé a gritar por mi padre porque mi papá en ese momento no estaba con nosotros.
I would start crying for my father because he wasn't with us at the moment.
Y más tarde, cuando el ejército se retiró,
and later when the army withdrew,
mi tío me vino a encontrar y me fui con él.
My uncle found me and I went with him.
How long was the army there?
¿Por cuánto tiempo estuve en la Fuerza Armada entre la comunidad? ¿Por cuánto tiempo?
Esto no fue en la comunidad, fue en el bosque.
Bueno, en el bosque, pero ajá. ¿Por cuánto tiempo duró este asunto?
Como media hora.
It's about a half an hour.
Sí. Y posteriormente el otro día sí me encontré con mi padre y todo, pero estaba totalmente destrozado.
And so then the next day I found my father, but we were just undone.
What did anybody explain to you why this happened?
¿Alguien explicó a usted por qué esto pasó?
En ese momento no, todos estaban llorando, nadie estaba pensando para explicar.
We were just crying, nobody had the time or the energy to explain it.
When you got older, did your family talk about this? Después,
cuando de más edad, explicaron a usted lo que pasó y por qué. ¿Hablaron en la familia ustedes?
Sí, después de unos, tal vez una semana después, me dijeron que tu familia ya no los va a saber.
About later, maybe within weeks, they said, your parents, your family is not going to come back.
Y pregunté, ¿quién mandó hacer esto? ¿Por qué?
I said, who ordered this? Why?
Y después me explicaron que era el gobierno que nos estaba persiguiendo.
And they said, it's the government that's persecuting us.
Was there anybody in your community, in your town, that was considered political?
Había gente en la comunidad, algunas personas, alguien que fue político, metido en un proceso político.
El problema que había visto el ejército con nuestras comunidades en ese área era de que nosotros estábamos organizados en cooperativa, entonces lo miraban como un algo muy muy mal que era.
So the army saw us as a problem because we were organized in cooperatives. So that was the thing that they found problematic.
What, and explain what a cooperative is.
¿Qué es una cooperativa?
Es una porción de tierra donde un grupo de personas trabajan de forma comunitaria.
So it's a group of people that work land communitarian in common.
En ese momento las cooperativas fueron muy, muy golpeadas porque los miraban como un sistema comunista.
They were misunderstood and seen as communist threats.
So was everyone in the village massacred?
Toda la gente de la comunidad fue masacrada.
En mi comunidad masacraron 14 personas.
No, 14 people.
14 people.
De los 800.
Sí.
So it's 14 people out of the 800, but all but one of his family.
And what happened to the village afterwards?
¿Qué pasó con la aldea después?
El ejército nos siguió persiguiendo durante meses por las montañas.
The army continued to persecute during the next months.
Nosotros tuvimos que seguir de un lugar a otro,
cambiando. So they kept moving from place to place to try to escape the army.
So the entire village kept moving from place to place, or your family kept trying?
La familia o toda la comunidad.
Se hicieron como grupos de 5 o 6 familias y cada quien andaba escondiéndose.
So they broke up into groups of 5 or 6 families, and they would hide themselves as groups.
So the village was no more. The community.
Entonces
was no
se acabó el pueblo.
Ah, sí, ya no. En el mero pueblo ya no vivía nadie. Todos nunca sabíamos de las demás familias.
So we never heard what happened to the rest of the families. That was the end of it.
So where did you go after this?
¿Dónde fue después?
Después de 7 meses de escondernos entre los bosques, ya no era posible vivir sin comida y sin abrigo.
After about 7 months of hiding in the mountains, we couldn't continue without coats and food and stuff.
Mis padres decidieron ir a México y fue así como nos fuimos de refugiados a México.
So his family went to Mexico as refugees. Mm.
We will be back. I'm having a conversation this morning with Edwin Canil Vicente, survivor of a Guatemalan massacre in 1982. He's being interpreted by Marilyn Lorenz. She is the program coordinator with the St. Louis Interfaith Committee on Latin America. We will be back after this break. Please stay with us.
Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
Why fight the holiday crowds when Raglan and Sons offers the right way to shop? From binoculars to Bible bags, lamps to luggage and learning toys, it's all at raglanandsons.net. Order online or get a catalog by calling 1-800-577-5786, locally 314-968-2789, or pick one up at the Olivet Great Harvest Bread Company, 9449 Olive Boulevard, just west of I-170. Use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount.
This is Sandy.
And this is Bobby. And we'd like to invite you to join us on the Design Life every Monday afternoon from 4 to 5.
We hope you'll join us as we talk about designing your life to achieve success and fulfillment.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
So bad, and I want to thank you for giving me that message.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This morning, I'm having a conversation with the survivor of a Guatemalan massacre in 1982, Edwin Canil Vicente. He is being interpreted by Marilyn Lorenz. She's the program coordinator from St. Louis Interfaith Community on Latin America. Let me get to a caller or two here before we finish our conversation. Dimitri, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Vincente. And I'd like to ask Ms. Lorenz to ask Mr. Vincente. When I visited Guatemala, the people down there told me that there were American interests behind the separation of Belize from the country of Guatemala when they declared their independence. I wonder if you could shed some light on that. And was it truly an American influence separation? And how much of a part did America play in that?
Thank you. Pues la pregunta es, cuando separó Belice de Guatemala, ¿fue por intereses norteamericanos? ¿Sabes algo de esto?
De esta parte fue más por intereses de Inglaterra.
More for interest of England than for the United States.
And I need to ask you this, Edwin. Tell us why you've come to the United States, and also that you will be speaking tonight. Marilyn, can you tell us about that, too?
Okay. ¿Por qué está aquí en San Luis, en los Estados Unidos? ¿Por qué está en giro?
Pues actualmente, después de la guerra, nosotros nos unimos los pueblos mayas y hemos empezado un proceso legal en contra de los militares que ordenaron la masacre de nuestros pueblos.
After those years, the Maya people began to organize into a force to challenge the government for the atrocities that they committed.
Y entonces nosotros nos pidieron de sensibilizar al pueblo estadounidense en cuanto a la política exterior del país.
So they asked us to begin to conscientize the people about the influences from outside the country and within the country.
Y además para que gente de aquí también nos apoye en este caso, porque necesitamos presión internacional para que haya justicia.
And the other side of it was to awaken the U.S. people about the interrelationships and the involvement so that we would have international support for our movement for justice.
And can you, and Marilyn, can you tell us when Edwin is going to be speaking tonight?
Edwin is speaking at noon today at Webster University in the Emerson Library, which is the building right in front of the Repertory Theater. At 4:30, he will be speaking at St. Louis University in Xavier Hall on the third floor. Xavier Hall is just west of the clock tower at the intersection of West Pine and Spring. Within the campus. And then tonight at 6:30, he will be at St. Joan of Arc Church in the rectory. St. Joan of Arc Parish has had a relationship with the community of Coban for the last 10 or more years. One of those examples of solidarity between U.S. and Guatemala.
And there is a connection also with the United States Army School of Americas. You're going to be a featured speaker there as well. Talk to us about the connection with the School of Americas.
Va a estar en Fort Benning en fin de semana. Habla poquito de la conexión entre lo que estaba hablando y la escuela de la muerte.
Cuando estábamos en México, supimos de que el gobierno de los Estados Unidos había financiado gran cantidad de dinero a nuestro gobierno para esta guerra.
When we were in Mexico, we discovered that the United States had financed a great part of the work of the Guatemalan government against our people.
Y además había dado todo el apoyo de material militar para llevar a cabo la guerra.
And had given military support for this war against our people.
Y supimos de que los militares que gobernaron en ese momento, había muchos de ellos vinieron a entrenarse aquí en los Estados Unidos, en la Escuela de las Américas.
And we discovered that many of the military leaders that we were what we were experiencing, that we're there, we're trained in the United States or by the United States in the School of the Americas.
Ellos los entrenaron para llevar cómo torturar, cómo hacer una guerra psicológica y cómo oprimir.
And what they learned in those schools was how to torture, how to use psychological influence, and how to oppress.
Entonces nos dimos cuenta que aquí había, bueno, que Estados Unidos estaba financiando esa escuela de.
And we knew that the United States was financing this School of the Americas.
Y todo este entrenamiento lo aplicaron en Guatemala.
And we received the brunt of what that training gave them.
Did you live in Mexico all of your life?
Vivía en México toda la vida.
Yo viví durante 12 años como refugiado en
México. I lived as a refugee for 12 years in Mexico.
As a refugee, what do you mean?
What do you mean? ¿Qué significa ser refugiado?
Cuando estuvimos ahí, nos pusieron en campamentos de refugiados.
We lived in a camp of refugees in Mexico.
Los primeros años fue muy duro y triste.
They were very sad and difficult years, those first years. ¿En qué sentido?
Porque no podíamos salir del campamento para trabajar o para conseguir.
We were not able to leave the camp. That's what I mean by difficult and sad. We could not go out to work or do anything.
Why couldn't you?
¿Por qué no?
Porque el gobierno mexicano nos había dado unos documentos y además había dicho que no podíamos salir más de cierto área que ellos habían asignado.
The Mexican government gave an area that we were not allowed to leave, and did not give us documents, so we were not able to leave, and they told us we couldn't, just period.
How many Guatemalans were in these camps?
¿Cuántos guatemaltecos estuvieron en estos campos?
Los datos que se manejaron al final fueron 45,000 personas.
The 45,000 is the number that they gave us.
So after 12 years, what happened?
Después de 12 años, ¿qué pasó?
Nosotros no nos sentíamos libres en México en su totalidad, entonces decidimos volver a nuestro país.
We did not feel free within Mexico, so we decided to go back.
So were you afraid when you went back?
¿Tenía temor a regresar?
Sí, siempre teníamos.
Yes, we always have fear.
So did you move to a different place than where you were born?
¿Regresó a día de antes o de otro lugar?
Sí, regresamos en la aldea de antes.
You went back to my old village.
So do you live in fear?
¿Vive en temor ahora?
Ahorita con este nuevo programa de Tratado de Libre Comercio sí nos está dando temor porque existe presión sobre nuestros recursos naturales.
Really, yes. With the new free trade agreements, there is a new drive to take our natural resources, and so that does make us afraid because we resist that.
And among the people of your generation, are more and more of them feeling like you and acting like you and seeing the fights that they have to fight for your country.
En la gente de su edad, de su generación, son más despertado de hacer algo por el país o.
Sí, de hecho, mi generación, de mi comunidad, nos hemos organizado y estamos muy dispuestos a luchar por nuestros derechos.
In my community, my generation is very ready to work for justice in our country.
And you are studying to be a lawyer.
Estudiando de ser abogado.
Sí, estoy en la última etapa.
I am in the last year.
What are you going to do with your law degree?
¿Qué vas a hacer con el título?
Mi idea es ayudar a los pueblos de mi región.
I want to help the people of my region.
De forma legal para enfrentar los programas de gobierno que nos van a dañar.
To help our community stop those things from the government that harm us.
I'm sure your mother would be very proud.
Su madre sería muy orgulloso de usted.
Gracias.
And is this your first trip to the United States?
La primera visita a los Estados Unidos.
No, ya había estado antes.
I've been here before.
If you could say one thing to Americans out here about what they could do to help you and help Guatemala, what would you say to them?
¿Qué puede decir a la gente de Estados Unidos? ¿Cómo puede nosotros ayudar a ustedes y Guatemala? ¿Qué una palabra, no?
de estar más consciente con la política exterior de su país.
To be more aware of the foreign policy of your of our country, of the United States. Be more. So I say to the United States people, be more aware of foreign policy and the effects on the people that you help.
And I want to take this time to thank you so much, Edwin. It's been quite a pleasure having you here. Thank you for sharing that. And Marilyn, thank you so much for doing such a fine job of interpreting. Could you let people know again where Edwin is going to be tonight?
Edwin will be at Webster University at noon today in the Emerson Library, at St. Louis University at 4:30 in Xavier Hall, third floor, and at St. Joan of Arc Rectory, 5900 Olathe, in South City at 6:30, potluck.
Very
hope to see you there, and come to 438 North Skinker at Friday evening at 5:30 and see three buses full of people go to the School of the Americas to protest the school and to close it so that we can end this blot on our conscience as American people.
Marilyn, thank you so much again. Edwin, thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome. Thank you.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. Just steps from the Lincoln Memorial where Martin Luther King Jr. gave this famous I Have a Dream speech. Groundbreaking is now underway on a memorial to the slain civil rights leader. President Bush is expected to take part in the event, along with former President Clinton, Oprah Winfrey, and others. The president's heard, meanwhile, from a bipartisan group that's been looking for new directions for the war in Iraq. More on the panel from ABC's Ann Compton.
Membership on this study panel is a who's who of recent administrations. Former secretaries of state and defense and an attorney general dating back to the Reagan era. Even former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. So this group's voice speaks with considerable power.
Iraq's prime minister is considering some new strategies, too. ABC's Aaron Katursky is in Baghdad.
The Iraqi government has been criticized for failing to contain sectarian attacks. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki scolded cabinet ministers for being loyal to their political party or religious sect and not to the country as a whole. He wants to reshuffle his cabinet now and improve the government's performance. But until he can broker some kind of truce between Sunnis and Shiites, there is expected to be no let-up in violence. And just today, at least 10 people were killed in a suicide blast on a bus.
That's ABC's Aaron Katursky in Baghdad. It's back to work for Congress, and there is plenty to do before the end of the year. One of the first orders of business in the House, a free trade bill with Vietnam. The faster you get to a hospital after you have a heart attack, the better off you are. But often patients wait after they get to the hospital. That's not good, says Dr. Harlan Krumholtz of Yale University.
Delays in treatment can increase the risk of dying by as much as 40, maybe even 50%.
The American Heart Association starting a new campaign called D2B, Door to Balloon, the time when a heart attack patient gets to the ER to angioplasty, a common treatment. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow is up 22 points, NASDAQ up 14. This is ABC News.
I'm a mother of three, and I'm just beginning a whole new career. I'm enjoying this part of my life every bit as much as when I was winning 18 Grand Slam tennis titles. And with delicious new CitraCal Creamy Bites, I even enjoy taking the calcium I need to help prevent osteoporosis. I'm Chris Evert. I'm 51, and I am strong.
Tell us about a strong woman you know at StandStrong.com. CitraCal Calcium. Stand strong.
It's not too early to be thinking about the holidays, but is it too early to start enjoying all that holiday deliciousness? Absolutely not. Visit Sam's Club this weekend for the holiday taste of Sam's Club and start revving up those taste buds. We'll be preparing samples of everything from savory meats to delectable desserts so you can taste how appetizing and easy a holiday meal can be with Sam's Club. Join us at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this Friday through Sunday, November 17th through the 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See samsclub.com for details.
You may not have to punish yourself physically to get in shape. Here's ABC's Dear to Brunch.
How about working out to this? It's not what you usually hear at the gym, but researchers in Italy have found waltzing just as effective as cycling and treadmill work for those with heart problems. Dr. Douglas Zipes is a cardiologist in Indiana and says patients are more likely to exercise because it has a social benefit.
An exercise program that involves a partner, such as waltzing, is an excellent idea and probably has that same beneficial emotional effect.
Besides that, no squeezing into spandex. Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
A town council in Spain is taking a big step toward what it considers banning sexism. Officials are demanding that all road signs and traffic lights show female figures with skirts and ponytails. In addition to the guys already on them, the new signs and lights should be up within a year. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by McDonald's. Police are trying to identify a woman who was found murdered in Wellston over the weekend. Police say the victim was discovered burned in a vacant lot along the 6200 block of Theodosia yesterday morning. Investigators say she was killed in another location before her body was dumped. She appears to be in her late 30s. Cause of death is pending autopsy. Anyone with any information is asked to call St. Louis County Police at 314-889-2341. A North St. Louis man is facing charges following a police standoff over the weekend. Authorities say 49-year-old suspect held police at bay for several hours yesterday morning in his home along 5200 block of Thecla. This was after he fired shots inside the home and refused to come out. No serious injuries were reported. The man's name is being held with pending charges. A man is dead following a weekend accident in Maryland Heights. 19-year-old Ivan Herrera of St. Louis County was killed Saturday afternoon when his car crashed into a guardrail along Page and Lindbergh and went down an embankment. Herrera's two passengers, who were female, were seriously injured. And finally, an overnight fire is being blamed for damaging a South County restaurant. Firefighters were called to Lime Pizza and More along the 1200 block of Telegraph around 2 o'clock this morning. No serious injuries were reported, and the cause is still under investigation. That is a look at this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by McDonald's. McDonald's new premium roast coffee is not gourmet, it's better. Taste it for yourself. Get a small coffee during Free Coffee Mondays. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, six minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Breakfast Sonic. Northbound 55 at Merrimack Bottom Road. Look for an animal struck there at southbound 270 at Olive. There's a medical emergency. And other than that, you have a number of ongoing construction projects in and around the St. Louis Metropolitan and Metro East, as well as St. Louis County and St. Charles County. Just use caution as you roll through those work zones. The only other delays are possible on the Poplar Street Bridge as you roll into downtown this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Breakfast at Sonic. Drive into Sonic this morning for their steak, egg, and cheese burrito. Thinly sliced steak, egg, and cheese wrapped in a warm tortilla. It's a hearty way to start your day. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday, mostly cloudy, 20% chance of rain this morning, partly sunny by this afternoon, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-50s, and Wednesday, windy and colder, rain likely in the morning and early afternoon. Then rain or snow is possible in the afternoon on Wednesday with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have overcast skies. Our current temperature sits at 44 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 43. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome, welcome. It's the Monday after the election results from last Tuesday, almost barely, almost kind of sort of into a week after. And still, the pundits are saying, you know, I don't know if this is exactly a referendum on anybody. I don't know. I think that this is more of a centrist movement. And you know, and it cracks me up. It truly cracks me up to hear pundits out here talking about that this is a centrist thing that happened when wasn't there a socialist elected to the United States Senate? I mean, I think a little bit of attention should be put on that thing. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the correct read, if you will, on the election results of 2006, the midterm election results of 2006, with the founder and the executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America. That's Tim Carpenter, and he is joining us from North Hampton, Massachusetts, where y'all have a brand new governor. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am outstanding.
Thanks so much for having us on this morning.
It is a pleasure to have you on, Tim. And how do you respond to this assessment that this election really wasn't a referendum or isn't it really a mandate and it's really about a centrist movement within the Democratic Party?
Well, again, it's pretty amazing the corporate media, the spin that they can put. First, we were told that
there would be no real outcome in regards to the election, in regards to the Iraq war, and we find that it was the number one issue, as you know and your listeners know, that drove this election. We did very well on Election Day, but we don't want to kid ourselves either. As you know, there's a lot of celebrating to do, but now we got a lot of work to do. We did elect a majority of Democrats, but we have not succeeded yet in getting our majority of progressive Democrats, but we're sure on our way, and it was a significant day for the grassroots, and through radio shows like yourselves and the progressive media and through the blog sphere, I think people are beginning to understand the impact of the election on Tuesday.
And, Tim, don't we also have to combine with the number of progressive people that were elected into office, the number of progressive issues that caught the attention and moved people during this election?
Oh, absolutely. We were born the last day of the Democratic National Convention when Democrats were meeting in Boston in 2004 because we believed that those issues that united us during the primary season had to move forward. And while we weren't too excited about our nominee, we all came together and felt that we had somebody who could defeat George Bush. We now know in hindsight that certainly wasn't the case.
No.
And the issues that united us are the same issues that voters went to the polls with and will continue to go, whether it be getting out of Iraq, and not just getting out of Iraq. And I think what's really important, Lisa, today we talk about the message of bringing home the troops and cutting off the funding for the war in Iraq and redirecting that money to meeting human needs, single-payer health care, repeal of the Patriot Act. All of those issues reverberated across the country, and those were the issues that motivated many of these elections and ultimately turned the Senate and certainly propelled the numbers of folks that were able to succeed in winning their House seats. I think this morning when we dissect and look at who won and where they won, what's very important for progressives, certainly progressive Democrats, is identify those candidates that were truly progressive that won in red districts. There's a lot of noise, of course, about Schumer and Emanuel and their efforts inside the party. There's a real struggle inside the party in the direction we're going to take as Democrats. And progressives were successful in winning a number of seats where Emanuel opposed us. We even overcame the DCCC and, in some cases, the Democratic Party leadership in states to elect real progressive candidates. So I hope this morning talk a little bit about that.
I'd love to talk a lot about that, Tim. We have to take a quick break, but we will be back. I'm talking to Tim Carpenter, founder and executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. He's joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back with some more of Mondays at 9. Stay with us.
Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU. I would like to take a moment to congratulate Liz Brown, winner of the 2006 award for Best Political Coverage Radio from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Her discussion last January of the continued delay of government aid to victims of Hurricane Katrina is just another reason why we call it award-winning. Tune in weekday mornings at 6 a.m. to hear Liz Brown on the award-winning Wake Up Call, only on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Réveillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide.
gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Mondays at 9. My name is Liz Brown, and my guest this hour, Tim Carpenter. He is the founder and executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. He's joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts, and we are dissecting the election results from Tuesday with respect to the progressive advantages and the progressive gains that we have made. And Tim, again, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Can we start some of that dissection?
Sure.
Can we start with some blue and red?
Absolutely. One of the things, and I've been fortunate to be on your show a number of times, and as you know, Progressive Democrats of America, we believe that for the Democratic Party to really become the majority party that we want it to be, just not in numbers, but in issues, that we have to embrace our progressive tradition. So we were born, as we said, 2 years ago to run authentic progressive candidates across the country. We were the only organization long before Move On to begin to challenge centrist Democrats on these fundamental issues that we spoke about earlier, single-payer health care, cutting the defense budget, speaking out about Katrina and the crisis that we faced down in the Gulf Coast. So what we attempted to do this first election cycle was to establish grassroots chapters, of which 138 exist today, to ask our grassroots chapters to move forward to endorse candidates that they believe could hold the progressive flank of our party. 44 candidates were endorsed. 14 of those candidates survived the primaries and were on the ballots. Two of those candidates this morning that we could talk a little bit about, I think that speak strongly to what PDA is about and what really happened on Tuesday, is John Hall out in New York, who ran against Sue Kelly, which was in a district that has not been Democratic since 1966.
Wow.
In which John Hall won on an anti-war platform. John Hall, as you may know, was the anti-nuclear activist who wrote the anthem Power in the late 70s, early 80s, was working with Jackson Brown on Musicians United for Safe Energy with Bonnie Raitt and Graham Nash. And he ran a campaign against all odds, the DNC, the D-Trip, Rahm Emanuel. Nobody gave John Hall any help. He had a primary opponent that the party establishment, the machine, was supporting, and yet John survived not only the primary, but on election day one. And then if you come across the coast out to California, in Northern California, Jerry McNierney, who ran against Richard Pombo. Richard Pombo was probably the worst friend of the environment, who 2 years ago when Jerry McNierney ran and lost, nobody helped him, of course, with inside the Democratic Party. Jerry never gave up, ran a very strong grassroots campaign. The Netroots were behind him. Again, in the primary, Democratic establishment, Rahm Emanuel, the D-Trip, ran a candidate against Jerry McNierney. Not only did Jerry defeat that candidate in the primary, but on election day this past Tuesday, Jerry McNierney is on his way to Congress. So those are two candidates that we feel very strongly about within PDA that we endorse, that moved a red district to a blue district on a progressive agenda.
A blue, a truly, truly, truly blue.
Absolutely. And again, in those races that we lost, I think, again, it's very instructive for the listeners and for you and I to work a little bit this morning to, again, dissect what happened. If you look in the primary season out in Maryland, and Donna Edwards, who I'm sure you know very well in the campaign she ran against Al Wynn, well, Donna was not successful in winning. She came within 2,000 votes, again, against all odds. Nobody inside the Democratic Party helped Donna, and she came within 2,000 votes. Christine Sagalas out in Illinois, who ran again against another D-Trip, a candidate that Rahm Emanuel airlifted into the primary, Tammy Duckworth, a very compelling story. She was a triple war amputee, but she had no right to get into that race. Christine Sagalas, who was a progressive, who ran against Harry Hyde.
And can we just stop just for a second, Tim, because
sure.
I really want to underscore who, I mean, Rahm Emanuel was running the campaign that the pundits are saying was successful in terms of describing who and what won in this past election. To contrast, if you will, the two women, the positions of a Duckworth and the positions of Christine, yes.
Well, again, Rahm Emanuel, and he is the pundits, you know, we're toasting Rahm Emanuel, and he did a great job in helping us to secure those races, but at what cost? This race, I think, really shows the struggle inside the Democratic Party. Rahm Emanuel was pushing a centrist candidate in Tammy Duckworth. We were pushing Christine Sagalas, who was opposed to the war before it started, who was strongly pro-choice, who ran against Henry Hyde long before anybody in the Democratic Party ran against her. She went on Google to Google search how to run for Congress, received 44% of the vote in 2004, should have rightfully been the nominee in 2006. But again, Rahm Emanuel going across the country, selecting candidates to run in districts where he felt he could win and control, because remember, he also certainly has a strategy in taking back the House to make sure those centrist Democrats are in the driver's seat. So his strategy was a very significant one to move out.
And a self-serving one.
Absolutely.
And
knock off those progressives.
And can we also talk about the amount of money that he poured into the Duckworth race?
Well, I think that's the most, you know, amazing figure. The close of the election, when Christine Scalise, when PDA was on the ground, we'd endorsed Christine. We, in fact, even had some of our staff left PDA to work on that campaign. The last 6 weeks of the campaign, we were successful in raising $60,000, which isn't a lot of money, but for the grassroots, that's a lot of money. The Democratic establishment with Rahm Emanuel raised over $800,000. That's with email blasts across the country from John Kerry, remember him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, speaker-to-be. They raised $800,000 on an election day, and so we came within 1.7 vote per precinct. While we didn't win, Christine really pushed the envelope. So in order to attempt to win that race, they had to pour even more money into that race. And as you know, last Tuesday, Tammy Duckworth lost. And when we look back now, we will have spent, the party will have spent over $1.6 million for a seat that we won't win. So while we praise Rahm Emanuel and he did a good job, we have to raise these fundamental questions as progressive Democrats. Why is it that our own party is spending these kind of resources to knock off truly progressive candidates? Now, Christine may not have won, but I can assure you she wouldn't have cost us $1.6 million in losing, and I would argue that she would have won, and that $1.6 million could have been better invested in helping other progressive grassroots candidates across the country.
And could you explain for the audience again who Rahm Emanuel is and the DCC?
That Rahm Emanuel is a product of the Clinton administration. He was a close ally and staffer in the Clinton administration. He's a Congress member from Chicago. And the Democratic Party is organized on a number of levels. A lot of people think at the county and the state level the Democratic Party is organized, but there's an entire another level at the national level. The Democratic National Committee, which is led by Howard Dean, who really is the hero of the grassroots this last election cycle, who really struggled within the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, to invest grassroots dollars across the country in all 50 states. Rahm Emanuel was given the job by the Democratic Party leadership and elected officials to raise money to elect Democrats. They worked where they could in coordination with the DNC, and in some cases, against the wishes of the DNC. It was a very contentious marriage at some point. Rahm Emanuel's job was to make sure the Democrats got elected. Howard Dean's job was to make sure that the grassroots was empowered. And as you can imagine, that was quite a struggle. At the end of the day, Rahm Emanuel, through what's called the DCCC, the Democratic Coordinating Committee, raised millions and millions of dollars, pushed the Democrats into a majority, and we're very fortunate now that we're going to have our first woman speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and we captured 33 houses. The question we have to raise now as we move forward, what will that Democratic Party look like, and what will that Democratic leadership look like on the Hill? It's our job this morning to make sure that Rahm Emanuel, while he attempted during the primary season to really cut off some of our progressive voices, that we make sure that voice resonates beginning this morning, all the way to January when the new members are sworn in. And most importantly, Liz, I think this morning we need to talk about 2008. Where are those races right now where we can ensure that grassroots Democrats, African Americans, and we can build the rainbow for progressive whites to work in alliance to ensure that in 2008 that we elect not just a Jerry McNerney and a John Hall, that we really begin to plan now to elect 20 or 30 real progressive Democrats. So our goal of establishing a progressive Democratic majority will move forward stronger in 2008.
And is it concerning to you, Tim, the love affair that appears to exist with the Democratic Party and the Harold Ford?
Well,
is it concerning to you at all?
It's absolutely stunning.
Oh!
When you begin to really look at his voting record, and I know you certainly know.
Oh, my God.
He is a centrist Democrat at best, a conservative
Democrat.
Oh, he
is not. He's not even in the center, Tim. Can we even put him in the center?
Well, some would. I can argue, Liz. I mean, when James Carville can come back after the stunning successes that Howard Dean had as the chair of the DNC and to even begin to talk about replacing him with Mr. Ford, it's striking, and that's why this morning we're very active on the blogs, and we encourage folks to really get on the talk radio shows, to really write letters to the editor to thank Howard Dean. And one thing we should all be doing is praising and thanking him for his investment. That's why we won seats in Nebraska and Indiana, because of the DNC investing in the grassroots. It's very shocking to think that James Carville would even be attempting. But again, it really shows, and it's in stark reality for people to see the struggle inside the party. There is a real struggle with the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, that was founded by the Clintons, in which James Carville is a mouthpiece for. And there's a real struggle in 2008 as we begin the presidential ascent for James Carville to really push the party back to the center.
And those of us that have been watching James Carville during the time that the Democrats were not in the majority, it was disgusting. It was really, really, truly hard to sit there and listen to him because he didn't fight. He didn't push back. And now he's pushing back a little. But what, do you have to win before you start pushing back?
Yeah, and that's why organizations like Progressive Democrats of America and grassroots Democratic clubs across the country have to make sure their voices are heard now and that we really work to drown out and take away his megaphone, because he doesn't speak for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. He speaks for the corporate Democrats and centrist Democrats across this country, and that's where this struggle of 2006 will take place now as we move forward into the presidential arena. We need to be very focused on making sure that we do the work that we need to do as Progressive Democrats to run in local county Democratic Central Committees to elect our friends and our neighbors and to run for the state central committees so that we are in place at the party level to begin to really challenge the DLC in a meaningful way.
And shouldn't we be concerned about even the use of this word centrist? Does it really describe who the people are on the ground that have that label?
Yeah, well, I mean, that, again, is why we were founded, to be that counterbalance to what the DLC or the centrist Democrats represent, or, as I think you're saying pretty strongly, and I tend not to disagree with you, the conservative Democrats in our party. We, you know, we've had one Republican Party. We're watching it in disarray now. We need an authentic alternative party. We need a real Democratic Party, and that's what we need to articulate and what that looks like. What the Democratic Party should be about this morning, and we're seeing some movement, is to begin talking about Iraq in a meaningful way, to support our troops by putting a timetable together to bring them home immediately, to begin to cut off the funding for the war. We've been very successful in putting millions of people in the streets. The polls are with us. But until we move Congress, this war and this occupation will continue. So we really have to challenge the Democratic Party leadership. We don't want just a timetable in 6 months to a year. We want to cut off funding now. That's how we ended the war in Vietnam.
That's right.
Bill Abzug took to the chambers to cut off the funding. So the message this morning has to be to the leadership, and if I can do a little full disclosure and a little advertisement for PDA, I'd really encourage folks, everybody that can be listening right now, go to pdamerica.org, or certainly after the radio show, go to pdamerica.org and really sign the online petition that supports House Resolution 4232 by Congressman Jim McGovern to cut off funding for the war. Let's put 100,000 signatures online and deliver those to Speaker Nancy Pelosi to really demonstrate to her what's happening at the grassroots level.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. Mondays at 9. Tim Carpenter, founder and executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the hosts of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one. We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
This is Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU. I would like to take a moment to congratulate Liz Brown, winner of the 2006 award for Best Political Coverage Radio from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Her discussion last January of the continued delay of government aid to victims of Hurricane Katrina is just another reason why we call it award-winning. Tune in weekday mornings at 6 a.m. to hear Liz Brown on the award-winning Wake Up Call, only on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
While this love has a voice that we both can hear. Before you let it go, greatest love of ever known, won't you please talk to me, promise me.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. My guest this hour is Tim Carpenter. He is the founder and the executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. Joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts, we are dissecting the election results from last Tuesday, the progressive impact that took place. And Tim, one of the things we didn't have a chance to really flesh out just for a second here, with James Carville calling for or throwing out there, testing the idea of a Harold Ford replacing a Howard Dean. How bad is Harold Ford?
Well, my political teeth were cut in the presidential campaign of Reverend Jesse Jackson in 1988 when I was on the ground working for Reverend Jackson in 1988. So when I look at African-American leadership, I guess my measuring stick begins with Reverend Jackson. Harold Ford certainly doesn't meet that criteria. He is, as we said, a real centrist, or as you would say, even stronger, more conservative Democrat. He was not there for us in opposition to the war when the war began. He was not there for us to speak out for universal single-payer health care. I'm not sure. You would probably know even better than I. I doubt if he's been down to Louisiana since Katrina or even prior to Katrina.
Has not. And also, when an organization that did a rating of a report card, if you will, of the Congressional Black Caucus, he continually gets Fs.
Well, I think that really speaks for itself. The measuring stick, really, not just the progressive, you look at congressional members in Washington, the Black Caucus, even the Black Caucus right now is not as progressive as we'd like to see it. In the last couple of years, there's been a real tilt over to the right-hand side. So the measuring stick we tend to use within Progressive Democrats of America to find out how authentic our congressional members are, we tend to look at the Congressional Progressive Caucus. That's an organization that's made up of Democrats in the Congress. It certainly could be Republicans, but the reality is it's all Democrats currently who identify themselves as progressives. The leader of the Progressive Caucus within Washington today is Lynn Woolsey from Northern California and Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who succeeded Ron Dellums out of the Oakland area. They lead 63 members of Congress who have organized as the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He certainly is not a member of that caucus. And the good news, as we were talking about these election results, we're very hopeful that the Congressional Progressive Caucus will now grow in membership from 63 members, could conceivably go up to 71 to 72 members.
Wow. And lay out some of those members for us, would you please?
Sure. In addition, as I said, the co-chairs of the caucus are Lynn Woolsey and Barbara Lee. Within Progressive Democrats of America, we're very proud. We're one of the few organizations that actually has congressional members who are part of our National Advisory Board. And five of those members, in addition to the two I just mentioned, who are part of our National Advisory Board, make up the Progressive Caucus. And I think the hero of all of us on this, who are listening today, the senior member, and really the conscience of Congress, is Congressman John Conyers from Detroit, Michigan. Congressman Conyers is a leader in the Progressive Caucus. He's on our National Advisory Board, as is Ralph Grijalva, the congressmember from the Tucson. He's one of the leading voices on the immigration fight. He's a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. The man I worked for president this past election cycle, Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, is part of the Progressive Caucus. So these are members that we think really speak to where the party should be going, the direction we should be taking. Dennis Kucinich, John Conyers, Barbara Lee, Lynn Woolsey, and, of course, Maxine Waters out of South Central Los Angeles, who's the leader of the Out of Iraq Caucus. She also serves on our National Advisory Board. We think these are the members that really show what direction the Democratic Party is moving and have continually, despite all of the 6 years and how hard it's been to continue to resonate a progressive voice inside of Congress, they have never deviated. They have been there from beginning to end, day in and day out on the floor of Congress, working inside and outside the Democratic Party to build our progressive agenda.
And let's talk about some of these progressive issues, because if we're going to analyze this election and we're going, and the pundits again are trying to bring this to the center, that this was a center type of movement within the Democratic Party, the issues that were important to people when they came out of the polling places and when they went into the polling places are nowhere centrist issues.
No, and I think, again, one of the things that people certainly on your radio show know, that Nancy Pelosi is a really progressive member of Congress. She's assumed the leadership role as the minority member and will become the speaker, but her heart and soul is with the progressive movement. She comes from the 8th Congressional District in San Francisco. I think one of the first things you're going to find that the Democrats are going to do as we take back the House is to begin to raise the minimum wage, which is one of the most important issues we need to do across the board for economic justice in this country, and that's going to be one of the first things that Nancy Pelosi is going to lead us on. And beginning yesterday on the Sunday pundit talk shows, you'll see progressive Democrats and the Democratic Party taking the leadership now to really move on Iraq, to begin the process to get our military personnel home and begin to talk about shutting down those bases. And I think the third really important issue that the Democrats are going to move forward through the leadership now of both the Senate and the House, Harry Reid and with Speaker Pelosi, is the whole question of single-payer universal health care. 50 million Americans, as we're talking right now this morning, can't even afford health insurance. More people have fallen under their need for medical health insurance since the Bush administration became won its second term. The rate of poverty is increasing under the Bush administration. We have to address this issue.
But aren't we? But aren't we also? My concern is that when I hear people who identify themselves as Democrats and identify the issues, I'm hearing a lot of middle class. I don't hear people. I had Claire McCaskill on my show. In fact, I had her on for an hour, for 6 weeks. And one of the questions that I asked her is can we say the P word? Can we say poor people? Do we hear enough candidates out here talking about an agenda for poor people?
Well, not enough. That's why Progressive Democrats of America needs your help and your listeners' help. We're going to organize a poverty caucus within the Democratic Party. It's a voice that's not certainly in the majority, but there's a strong minority within our party that understands and makes those connections. You can't spend $10 million an hour in Iraq and continue to bankrupt this country. We need an articulate vision, and we need a spokesperson inside our party. And I think the Barbara Lee certainly exemplifies that, as does Maxine Waters. As you said, we have to talk about rolling back the Bush tax cuts. We have to empower those members of Congress that are going to move forward to talk about rebuilding the Gulf region. We need to empower those folks in Congress that are making those connections, as you're saying. We need to talk not just about poor people, but about poverty. What it means in America today when most Americans, real Americans, are struggling simply to make their rent and to feed their families. And I believe you'll see more of that certainly in this Congress, but we need to continue to organize and mobilize. Our work certainly did not end on Tuesday. We're on a 20-year protracted struggle inside the Democratic Party. We've got to turn this whole thing around, and it takes one election cycle at a time. We got a lot of work ahead of us. We need to find those voices, empower them, and we need to work at the grassroots level. We need to work with organizations like Progressive Democrats of America, as you said, who understand these issues, to connect those dots, to bring those folks into this struggle, to be a part of it, to challenge Washington.
What do you say of the new governor of Massachusetts?
Well, Deval Patrick is a phenomenal person, but let's not, again, kid ourselves. He's not a progressive. He's a good liberal. He came out of the Clinton administration, and living here in Massachusetts and having the honor of meeting Deval Patrick over a year and a half ago prior to his run, I had an opportunity to meet with him and spend time with him. I was a delegate. I worked very hard for him here in Massachusetts. It's a spectacular symbolism here in Massachusetts that we could elect an African-American in Massachusetts to go to the State House for the first time in 16 years for Massachusetts to have a real Democrat at the State House. Now, what I believe Deval Patrick symbolizes is an incredible, uncanny ability. First of all, he's an incredible, articulate spokesperson. He's a great speaker. He's a great orator. But I think most importantly, Deval Patrick really has shown an ability to listen. And I think that he's going to empower and bring to Beacon Hill here in Massachusetts a group of people that will be willing to listen and to move Massachusetts back to where it should be. And I think he's going to be one of those great voices across the country just as Barack Obama has emerged, I think Deval Patrick was certainly going to emerge as one of the spokespersons across the country, not only for the African-American community, but for all Americans and for certainly for all of us that are working to make this a better country.
Well, for me, the jury is still out on Barack Obama. I'm not on the Barack Obama bandwagon yet. But in terms of how things look for 2008, speaking of Barack Obama, how do things look for 2008?
Well, I'm certainly with you in regards to him. I think it's very early to be talking about a presidential race. I was fortunate enough to be on the floor of the National Convention when he gave his amazing speech. But like you, the jury's out, just as it's out on Deval Patrick. But again, I think both of these gentlemen show a capacity to grow. Barack Obama does come out of the civil rights and out of the peace and justice and out of the social movement arena. Now, the question will be if he can translate that into a national and into an international following. And, you know, the jury, as you said, is certainly out. I think it's really interesting as we begin this whole arc now into the presidential race that Russ Feingold has taken himself out. I was very hopeful that Russ Feingold would be one of those strong progressive voices from the outset that would really hopefully challenge Hillary Clinton. I think that Barack Obama certainly will be one of those folks. I really want to make sure that we have the debate that we didn't have in 2006.
I would rather have a Russ Feingold than a Barack Obama.
Absolutely. No, I'm with you. I'm sorry that Russ, you know, took himself out. I think he would have been a very important voice in this race. So I think what we need to do right now is at the grassroots level is challenge Barack Obama, as you said, and certainly Hillary Clinton on the issue of the war, challenging them on universal single-payer health care, challenge them on really redirecting our military budget to meeting human needs. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us on the grassroots to hold these folks accountable.
And we're going to take another break. I'm talking to Tim Carpenter, founder and executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. He's joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts, and we are dissecting the progressive impact from the midterm election of 2006. Stay with us.
I'd like to take a moment to congratulate Liz Brown, winner of the 2006 award for Best Political Coverage Radio from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Her discussion last January of the continued delay of government aid to victims of Hurricane Katrina is just another reason why we call it award-winning. Tune in weekday mornings at 6 a.m. to hear Liz Brown on the award-winning Wake-Up Call, only on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
School, church, civic, and other nonprofit organizations often have tight budgets. At WGNU, we understand that and remind you that we can help. If you know of a nonprofit group that would like WGNU to help promote events and ongoing programs free of charge, just send a fax with all the information to our public service department at area code 314-454-6609. Requests must be submitted 2 weeks in advance of any event. WGNU Radio reserves the right to edit or reject any submission because of time constraints and objectionable or commercial content.
Brenda Coates is a real GEICO customer, not a paid celebrity. So to help tell her story, we hired Mr. Bert Bacharach.
Last year, I was rear-ended by a GEICO customer.
I was hit in the rear.
First thought in my mind was about that funny lizard.
Lizard licks his eyeball.
I was so impressed with how they handled my claim, I switched.
I hope I'll never get hit in the rear again.
GEICO. Real service, real savings.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson. Join me right after the 10 o'clock news here on AM 920, WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Father, stop criticizing your son. Mother, please
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Mondays at 9. My guest this hour is Tim Carpenter. He is the founder and executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. He's joining us in Northampton, Massachusetts. And we're talking about, we're deconstructing, we're analyzing the election results of 2006, the midterm elections of 2006. Tim, I was watching one of the Sunday morning shows yesterday, and people were giving, the question was asked, how long do you think Democratic control of the House will last with this routing that took place on Tuesday? The Republicans were in after their election of, what was it, 94, 12 years. Some folks were saying 5 years. Some folks were saying 20 years. What's your take on that?
Oh, I think we continue to build. I'm very optimistic. Again, we took back the House with some real centrist Democrats and some progressives, and I think this next cycle we'll add even more progressives, and 2010 more progressive. I'm very confident that the Democratic Party, as we reorganize ourselves across this country and really dig into the grassroots and continue to organize and mobilize, we will become an even stronger party. And as we take back more and more states, I would hope that 20 years is the first cycle. I'm hoping we'll be holding on for some time. I'm very optimistic about where we are. But with that optimism comes the reality that we've got a lot of work to do. In Missouri, we've got Progressive Democrats of America chapters that are working, and we have chapters in Florida. So we need to grow those chapters, and we need to continue to do the hard work to ensure that we can hang on to the House and grow those numbers.
Are you at all concerned about the impeachment issue? Because I had Howard Dean on my show, and I asked him about the impeachment, and he said that it's off the table. I talked to, our new senator, a senator-elect from Missouri, about impeachment as well, and she expressed the same type of position. Are you concerned? Is that an issue for Progressive Democrats of America?
Absolutely. We were on the ground with Congressman Conyers back in December when he introduced House Resolution 635 to begin the select hearings to look at the lies that led to the war with the pre-intelligence and all of that work. And so we're very excited about the fact that John Conyers will be the chair of the Judiciary Committee. And we would expect the Democratic leadership to say that it's off the table. We understand that in the grassroots. It's the first thing that they're not going to address, and we understand that. But come February, the movement for impeachment will only grow. We were in Philadelphia just yesterday alone with Liz Holtzman, the congresswoman who led the impeachment hearings against Nixon in 1974.
Yes, she's been on the show before. Both of them have been on the show
before.
Well,
you know what great spokesperson here. We were on the ground talking in Philadelphia. We're going to organize on December 10th, Human Rights Day, town hall meetings across the country to make the connection of the lies that led to the war, not necessarily, quote-unquote, to impeach, but to hold the president accountable. By doing that work of holding him accountable, the only logical conclusion once we have those hearings will be, of course, impeachment. So once again, the people are ahead of our folks in Washington. We expect them to take it off the table for the time being, but we will put it back on the table in February as we begin to do the work that we need to do. So our job will be to keep that issue, and it's not going to be that hard to do because the majority of Americans really want to know all about the lies that led to it, and in addition to the pre-war intelligent lies, the wiretapping and Katrina. The American people want to hold our president accountable. It will be Congress's job, and we call it a 1-2-3-step process. Oversight, accountability, the logical conclusion will be, of course, impeachment. So the first rule between now and January is to remind folks the role of Congress to assert its oversight abilities and to begin to do its job. When the subpoenas start rolling, and when John Conyers and Congressman Henry Waxman take their positions as chairs of their various committees, the logical conclusion will be impeachment. So our work in Progressive Democrats of America after DowningStreet.org is to continue to organize at the grassroots level to ensure that that is what happens.
A lot of the pundits out here, the billion-dollar pundits out here, are taking the results of the election in Vermont with Joe Lieberman as a so-called independent as proof that the liberal bloggers out there have no power. How do you respond to that and that they have no impact? How do you respond to that?
Well, in Connecticut, it was a very interesting race. We need to remember that Ned Lamont came out of nowhere. Yes, he was able to self-fund and put a lot of money in that campaign. But he did win the election, and unfortunately, many Democrats at the leadership position who should have stripped Joe Lieberman of his committee assignments and should have really thrown him out of our party through that race, they didn't, and they cobbled him. So, yes, Connecticut is an isolated example. Ned Lamont did a tremendous job. But then you can just flip that back and go over to Virginia and look at what Webb did against George Allen. And the fact of the matter is that Webb won against George Allen. So if you go state by state by state and look, the majority of the folks who won in regards to the Senate races were those that were working within the Democratic Party who are either calling for a timetable or beginning to talk about withdrawal of our troops.
Well, can you say that Joe Lieberman lost on the issue of when he ran against or when he was running on progressive issues, he lost, and the reason that he won is because Republicans elected him?
Well, absolutely. There were more Republicans who voted for Joe Lieberman. If you look at the numbers of independents and Republicans who ended up voting for him, that certainly is the case. When the issue was on the war in the primary, he lost. Democrats did not come back to Joe Lieberman, and as you said, he was very skillful in weaving his election for the general election and bringing those independents and Republicans. I think it's a disservice to the Democratic Party to see that I and D by his name. He is an independent, and I was disappointed, like many of us were, that he was able to succeed on Election Day, but we're going to keep coming back. Joe Lieberman does not speak for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. He's on the margins of the Democratic Party, and he should have been removed through the primary season. While we're not successful yet, that struggle is certainly not over.
What about the socialist that we have elected as a United States senator?
Well, Bernie Sanders is a wonderful guy, and Vermont is lucky to have him. And one of the great things that I think is going to happen, as we spoke earlier in our conversation about the Progressive Caucus in the House, is that Bernie Sanders, along with his good friend Sherrod Brown, who also won in Ohio, where Ohio went from red to blue, where we gave Kenneth Blackwell his unemployment papers, Senator-now-elect Sherrod Brown and Senator-elect Bernie Sanders will go to Washington, and our hope is that they'll establish now the Senate Progressive Caucus. So just as we spoke earlier about how the members of the House are organizing under the banner of progressives, Bernie Sanders will lead that fight in the Senate. He is a remarkable politician from his race in Congress, from mayor to Congress and now to the U.S. Senate. He will be a strong voice for those of us that really want to see this party move in the direction we need it to move in.
And he's already indicated that he will be caucusing with the Democrats.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to watch he and Joe Lieberman.
Yes, it will. yes, it will. Let me get to a caller or two here. You're on Mondays at 9, Mike, with our guest, Tim Carpenter.
Yes, Liz. Mr. Carpenter, I have just two quick questions. First one is, since the Democrats are in charge as of January, I'd like to have somebody out there ask for the minutes of the meeting that Dick Cheney had with the oil companies. And also, I'd like to have somebody get out and really ask the questions about what happened on 9/11 and why Don Rumsfeld, the head of the FAA, and the head of NORAD weren't fired on September the 12th. Thank you.
A lot of folks should have been fired, huh, Tim?
Oh, yeah, thank you. No, it's a great question. As we said, when the Democrats take over in January, there's going to be a flurry of subpoenas over here to begin that process. Who were those energy executives that were meeting with Dick Cheney who were mapping out our energy policy that led to the invasion of Iraq and put Halliburton and Bechtel in those no-bid contracts? Those are the what we're talking about when Liz talked about impeachment and accountability. We need real accountability. We believe that Congressman Henry Waxman and his leadership now in the government reform committees will begin that process to unmask all that we know that took place, to have the subpoenas now that we can put that evidence. And in regards to 9/11, that's a long struggle. We know now that the commission never did its job. We know there's a lot of questions. I think one of the movements that's totally under the radar of corporate media, of course, at the grassroots are the 9/11 folks who have worked tirelessly to bring the issues of 9/11 to the forefront. There's lots of questions that simply will not go away. And I think those folks that continue to organize, those organizations across the country, the 9/11 truth squads and so forth, will continue to raise those issues. And just in the next election cycle and the next election cycle, those issues will be dealt with. And I hope that the Democratic Party will do a better job in addressing, as you said, a number of questions or dozens of questions that are related to 9/11.
And with respect, going back to the 08 presidential election, are we stuck with Hillary? What's the process here? What do you see of possibilities out here?
Well, again, Progressive Democrats of America, we are working for an authentic progressive voice, and we don't believe that Hillary Clinton meets that criteria. That's why we worked for Jonathan Deshiney in New York in the primary.
Yes, had him on the show, too.
It was very important in 2006 that Hillary Clinton be held accountable in her Senate race to raise the issue of the war. I think it's fair to say that the majority of progressives inside our party right now are part of the anybody but Hillary faction right now. We're not sure who that candidate will be. As we said earlier, losing Russ Feingold is really hard.
What about Edwards?
Well, Edwards is one of those members that's really made a transformation since his last election run. I think it's very difficult for progressives at this point in time to really start the presidential cycle to support somebody who was not right on the war from the outset, and Russ Feingold met that criteria. important thing about Congress, about Senator Edwards, is that he did show an ability to grow, as we said earlier about Deval Patrick. His wife did a wonderful job, Elizabeth, in really helping to educate him, and her friendship with Cindy Sheehan has moved John Edwards, and John Edwards gave a very powerful speech in New Hampshire, and I really encourage everybody to read it. And he's one of the few candidates, as you said earlier, Liz, that can say the word poverty and say the word poor.
And that's why I was asking about him.
And he can really make those connections. So I see him now with Russ Feingold fading as somebody that's going to really begin to emerge even more on the progressive side. I very much like Senator Edwards, and I had the privilege of seeing him during the last election cycle, and I think he may raise to that point. But right now, there are a number of questions in regards, as I said, on the war issue with Senator Edwards. But he has done a remarkable job in the last 2 years of crisscrossing the country, working with ACORN, working with Janitors for Justice, and really speaking out on those populist economic issues. And he has shown an incredible capacity to grow on the question of the war as well.
And Hillary has not shown growth. She's shown strategic movement on it, but she hasn't shown growth.
It's very difficult. It's very frustrating to think that everybody right now wants to anoint her to be that candidate. As you said, Hillary Clinton, if you were to put her in the room and ask her for 3 hours to give her position on the war, I'm not sure she could. She's had incredible opportunity to speak out against this war and to show leadership, and she hasn't been there. She's shown great opportunity to show leadership in regards to fair trade and free trade. And unfortunately, her husband and the Clinton administration brought about the whole free trade that is bringing the economic hardship across this country. And people need to remember she served on the board of Walmart. So when you talk about those issues of poverty and the poor, I'm not clear that Hillary Clinton can be that spokesperson.
And she was a Republican, wasn't she? She worked for Barry Goldwater, didn't she?
She came out of the Goldwater tradition, and she's proud to say she was a quote-unquote Goldwater girl.
Yes, she was. Tim Carpenter, founder, executive director of Progressive Democrats of America, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for the opportunity, and I really encourage folks to sign those online petitions. Visit us at pdamerica.org, and Liz, thanks so much for all your work.
You too, Tim. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Peace be with you.
Peace, too. Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and stay strong.
You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is you and your wound, that's below, that's below me.